Hello everyone, Shannon Gus here getting you ready for all the coverage that we have about Survivor South Africa Immunity Island Episode 3 here on RHAP. So the first thing you're going to hear is a recap with me and Mike and Marion, our guests from Survivor South Africa Champions. After that, you will get the Pinty exit interview, which is delayed from last week because that was a little late. That'll be just after 2 hours and 15 minutes. And then you will get the very unfortunate Mike Claus exit interview. So sad that happened at about 2 hours and 34 minutes. So if you want to skip ahead, come back, go from the beginning, it's all up to you, but I hope you enjoy, and I will see you on the other side.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Vintage medal.
Give them the swimmer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shkeli.
Aldi. Million. Rubli.
Tribe spoke.
Tribe
spoke.
Tribe spoke.
Tribe spoke.
For the adventure of a lifetime.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. I'm your host Shannon Gus here to talk about episode 3. It was a devastating episode. We lost an absolute preseason favorite and season favorite. I loved him. It was Mike Claus. It is so sad. And to talk about it, I have to welcome in the Mike Claus to my Carla. I had to use it while he was still in the game. It's the great Mike Bloom. Mike, thank you for being here.
I do not feel good about that comparison, considering what just happened in this episode. I fear you might sell me out, Shannon.
No, I just thought, I had to make you Mike, and you're the guy.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, and I thought maybe it's like that I'm sometimes irrational and all over the place, but you love me anyway. So I thought maybe that worked as well as a duo. It was just mainly that they're close. That was the thing.
Exactly. No, regardless, I am very happy for the comparison. And it just shows in the game of Survivor, sometimes your savior can be your spurner the very next time.
Yeah, sometimes an edit gives you that someone saved you and you did nothing to help yourself. And then the next week you did pretty much nothing wrong and someone absolutely buried you. So look, things can turn around quickly in Survivor. And we need to bring in our guest, who is someone we just watched on Survivor South Africa Champions, an absolute standout from the season. It is the eye roll queen of Jury Villa, the great Marion DeVos. Marion, thank you so much for being here.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me.
I was so excited to have you. I mean, that was one of the best parts of we love Survivor South Africa Champions anyway, but now we have like all these new people that we love and that we love to watch and then we get to talk to, and it's just like a win-win all around.
Very excited to be here. Very excited to discuss the episode.
Well, I know that I teased this last time. Marion, you had a bit of your own sort of like tribe summit across seasons. People who follow you on social media might have seen that. You had a bit of a watch party this past week to watch the swap episode, right?
Yes, we did. So it was myself, Shane, Amanda Hoosen from season 2, Dino from the season. And who else? Oh, it was Amanda's husband. And then we had another friend over. Unfortunately, Philip had to cancel. But it was just so great seeing Shane again. It's like it's always a pleasure to catch up with him.
Yeah, I mean, these are all like great characters from your season. And I feel like a lot of people did follow us on the journey to season 5, and a lot of people had watched it in their own right in 2014. But hopefully having you on the podcast and giving people just massive FOMO from that whole season will encourage anyone who missed out to check out our coverage and watch that season back, because we had such a fun time with it. And yeah, now you're here talking to us. What a year it's been.
My season was quite exciting. Shane's hilarious. Like, I actually forgot how funny he is. And Dino was in tears the entire time because Shane's just hilarious. So he was running commentary on this episode. So, yeah.
What I love about that is that the one providing commentary at your watch party was not the person who was there experiencing the events that they're watching, but instead just like the random guy in the corner. I will also say, Shane is rocking the shaved head look very well. He kind of looks like a supervillain, which seems very Shane, but like it's a good look for him.
Very good. And his beard is so cool with like it's black with white. So he's really looking good. Like he just turned 50 recently. So he's really looking good for his age.
Yeah. Okay. So if anyone doesn't know what we're talking about,
go back, watch Survivor South Africa Champions because you're missing out. But Marion, I want to get your thoughts on this season. 3 episodes in, you're a huge super fan. How are you enjoying it just across the board?
Where do I even start? So the cast is great. I'm a huge fan of Santoni. Like, I just feel like she's such a breath of fresh air to the Survivor franchise. I really love Kieran. Huge fan of who else am I a fan of? Dino. Being a little biased, but yeah, so Santoni, Dino, Kieran, and then, oh, Rainier. It's such a pleasure watching Rainier. He kind of reminds me a lot about Jacques from season 7.
Mm.
So I'm getting a big Jacques vibe from Rainier, which is a good thing.
Rainier, to me, like, we pre-season talked about the Werner comparison, and I continue to get that from him, not just because he's been so solid, but just I thought the one thing was that, Werner was kind of like the tribe dad, and Rainier, I think, is a bit younger, but I feel like Rainier does kind of come across as that, like, statesman of the tribe, like, age aside.
He is a dad. He's a young dad, but he's still a dad, nonetheless.
Yeah, but does he feel like a dad to these people? Would, you know, like, that's how Werner felt, I think, to, like, his kind of tribe family that he was, like, leading the cult of. And I feel like Rainier even does have that. Like, he's keeping his tribe quite unified here when they absolutely shouldn't be. Like, I feel like that kind of leadership quality really does come across. And I very much see the Werner comparisons, which is obviously high praise only a couple of episodes in. But I can see it.
I see from, like, a strategy perspective, I might see that. But I don't know. From, like, a personal perspective, all I see is curly-haired Spencer Bledsoe, personally.
Really?
I think it's just the way he has of talking. Where, like, he just has a very sort of, like, straightforward voice, and he talks like this, and there's a lot of dramatics behind it. Like, I just get... And they have sort of similar faces as well. So it's, like, Spencer with much better positioning is what I think of Rainier at this point.
Yeah, and bigger hair. So those are the two things. I definitely want to, like, get into the episode and these tribes and break down all the dynamics. I know that we had some calls for people to just kind of lay out the new tribes for us. Only 2 episodes in to get a swap is a lot. Firstly, Survivor South Africa, Rahab Hub tradition, we have to give new names to the swap tribe. So here's what I'm proposing. This is for anyone who's jumping on board. Usually what we do is we have, like, the initial swap tribes, and then we have to change the names of either these tribes or the old tribes so we can refer to each kind of iteration as such. Mm-hmm, so we had Vuna. Mike, we're obviously going with, what do you think?
Well, so I was thinking about this. The question is, do you go with Nuna or Vunu?
Nuna. I've gone with Nuna.
Okay, yeah. Nuna. I think that works too. But I think this is luckily a tribe that has 2 options. I would not be surprised, to be quite candid, if LaRue came up with these tribes for this naming convention in mind. There are multiple outs here.
Don't give us that much credit.
Well, here's the thing. How about if they swap tribes for some reason one more time, then we'll go to Vunu. Now there's multiple options.
No, then we'll go to Nunu, and it will lose all meaning, because that's what we do.
Nunu.
Yeah, so we make words have no meaning. Zamba was harder. My proposal is... The first iteration is Wamba, and now we're on Zamba. Or is that bad? I struggled. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about that. It feels like it's odd to retroactively be like, well, this first tribe wasn't actually named that tribe.
No, we've done that before. We have. I don't remember when, but I know we have. We've changed old tribes before, and now the new tribe. Would you like what? Tuba? No, help me out with Zamba.
Tuba. Let's just name it a musical instrument. Tuba.
Zamba and tuba. No, terrible, because I've written Wamba all through my notes. So that's
no,
gonna
I think we call it tuba. I think we have to call it tuba now. Because now I'm just thinking about a big old tuba as a tribe.
All right, so if that makes any sense to anyone, we had Vuna, now we have Nuna. We had Zamba, now we have tuba. And that's where we're at with the tribes. So if you guys, like, we're going to break it down. And I think the way to break down these tribes, the easiest way is to think of them each as, like, 3 factions of 3. So you've got... What is it? They're now on Nuna. The tribe that didn't go to tribal council was Nuna. And then you've got this majority of Rainier, Marisha, and Nicole with the outsiders of Dino, Teresa, and Tion. And then you've got the newbies of the Nesu, Kieran, and Tyson. So those are like the three threes. And then on Tuba, which went to Tribal Council, we've got, we're going to have to get through the podcast with that. We've got Chappies, Paul, and Santini, who are together. We obviously saw the three, or what was once a three, of Kyla, Mike, and Wider. And then the newbies of Amy, Smash, and Paul. So I know it might seem like a lot. We've just gotten to know these people. They're in new tribes. But I think if we break it down like that, it's not so hard to get used to the new configurations.
Not to mention that all you need to do is just take a little handy dandy look at the lower third of the screen. Yes. When someone's in a confessional, the production has done a really great job of putting little tribe symbols next to someone's name to show what their old tribe is and what their new tribe is. So even if you just need a reminder of like, wait, which tribe was that person on? You can take a look at that. Though, Marion, it really does seem like old tribes might not matter at the end of the day, or at least like sticking tribe strong may not matter in this new configuration.
I was quite shocked that they didn't vote as a unanimous six, to be honest. You know, we all know that Survivor is a numbers game. And even when you don't like someone, if the numbers are in your favor, you keep it. I mean, I couldn't stand Zan the Man, but, you know, I had to keep him around for a few votes. So it's going to be quite interesting to see what is going to unfold. And I need to give Mike credit, because I think he really called out Carla, just like how he mentioned that this new, like, everyone's playing her. And like, he saw it from a mile away, and she was just so in her feels that she couldn't see it. So the fact that they didn't vote strong was the biggest shocker of the episode for me.
Yeah, you picked up on two ironies that I thought were kind of funny. Maybe not ha-ha funny, especially for my claws who went home. But firstly, the fact that, like, the first two episodes, so much of our conversation, especially on the podcast, was around, like, be as unified as possible. Like, oh, your random draw at the beginning, like, you're going to swap soon. Be unified. Rhaenyra, if you're making that move, you come back and you unify. And Essa, yeah, if you're making that move, do it in the for the benefit of being one single unit. And I do think that was a leading factor. Cut two, they swap. And they've immediately broken down. So all of that unity is gone. All that fluidity is out. And Rhaenyra's tribe actually is presenting united front, but there are a lot of outsiders there where it should be really fractured. So I'm interested to see how that went. And then from my claws perspective, that last week he was seen as, I thought it was a terrible edit for him, you know, like the napping edit. And it seemed like Carla just like dragged him, not just saved him, but like did everything to like shield him, put like her whole body over him, and just like carry him to safety. Whereas this episode, he actually goes home. I thought it was a good episode for him, a good edit. Like, he showed us being really correct, his reads are right. It's like, not more really could he have done. And Carla, his savior, I think is shown to be like his extreme detriment and completely dooming his game. She's shown to be irrational and wrong and underestimating, especially Chappies. And yeah, he, when he disagrees with her, shown to be completely right. And it seems like she kind of buried him in this episode.
I totally agree. I think Carla mentioned that Chappies and Paul have zero social abilities. And I think on her side, just to assume that they don't have any
skills or social capital.
Just for her to assume that just because she's not talking to Chappies, or the fact that she doesn't like to talk to Chappies, doesn't mean that he's not necessarily talking to everyone else. That's why I think it's so important when you're on that island, even when you don't like someone, you at least need to sort of touch base with them, or nothing, or if nothing else, at least just like touch base with them. Like, don't just assume just because I'm talking to you, you aren't talking to anyone else.
Yeah, I think Carla is such an interesting character so far in this season, because like we talked about, I mean, huge Chizzy leader last week in the points, had like a very great episode, seemingly single-handedly saving Mike and putting together this pinty blindside. Cut to her now being, from the editing perspective, the one that really, you know, is the one to get the target onto Mike, because she sold out Chappies and Paul too early. Again, this is based on an edit after talking with Mike, which the interview you'll hear at the end of this podcast. And then also seeing a couple of the secret scenes. I could see a bit of where Carla was coming from. It seems like as soon as they got to Tuba, Chappies and Paul just like weren't talking to Carla whatsoever, which I think really sent up red flags in her head of like, okay, do they really want to work with us? And Mike, I think, told me in his interview with him that he felt like his ship was already kind of sinking as well, and that Carla didn't necessarily, she wasn't the factor to contribute to him going. Does that make up for the comments that you both mentioned of her really just counting out Chappies and Paul? No, I don't think so. I think that is a grave underestimation on her part. But I do think that there were certainly other factors that we see behind the scenes or outside of the edit that I don't think we can single-handedly blame Carla for Chappies, Paul, and Sintoni flipping here.
Well, I think that's the question is like, how much is it that, you know, that they're never going to work with you, right? Like Chappies is coming in, he's never going to work with you. So if you're pitching to Zamba, it's that like desperate pitch, that like your last resort, or how much is it that they were going to work with you, but you made the first move and turned them off? You know, like, is it a self-fulfilling prophecy? What came first, the chicken or the egg in that regard? And I think you even asked Mike that and he doesn't really know. And I think it's probably hard to say, but I think even within that really difficult situation, and I do think it was like a really hard road for them to work with these groups, I think it makes sense for those groups to work together. I still see mistakes in that, you know, like the underestimating. She kept saying like the Chappies was blindsided, small thing, but he wasn't, like that kind of thing where it's like he's more in the know than you think he is with the Pinty blindside, for example. And I think as well, just her read seemed wrong in it. Like my clause, even in the interview with you, like, he thought it was a bad situation. I think you could tell that the whole time. Like, it wasn't a good situation, but at least he knew that, and he was, like, trying his best with it, whereas, like, she seemed to really think that she could get the, you know, the Amy contingent on side. So that, and that wasn't the right read. Like, she was being played, as Mike Law said. So you see little mistakes in that, even if, yes, it was an uphill battle, she was still, like, struggling up that hill, as she did, you know, in parts of the challenge as well.
Yeah.
I'm curious, did at any point, like, does Carla attempt to talk to, like, Chappies and Paul or to, like, make amends with him?
Yeah, I wonder that. And obviously, we'll certainly have that question locked and loaded if and when we get to talk with Carla. I would imagine, I don't know, because you would imagine, yes. But on the other hand, if she believes she's getting the cold shoulder initially, I wonder how much she feels like, does it really matter for me to do it? And instead, we'll talk in the body corporate big group meeting. I want to talk about this with you, Marian, because you had a situation, right, where you swapped into a tribe where you also had that like super majority, right? And you also had a situation where you end up keeping those outsiders in and getting rid of other people. What did you think about what Mike did here as this sort of like last resort, big group meeting and the closing pitch he had?
I think Mike did the right thing. I think on my season, I was playing more as a super fan, and I wasn't really taking my time to like think things out. And I think with the evolution of the game, like cast that like comes after a season, like you kind of pick up on other people's mistakes and you try and correct it. So I think Mike was right. I think what could have potentially saved Mike is if Carla had that conversation with Chappies and Paul one-on-one and she was like being sincere. So it's a mistake that I made in my season, but it's also a mistake that I don't think I would make again should I ever play. Like, I feel like if you are in the majority, stick to your majority, like, even if you necessarily don't like someone.
Well, I think like Carla seemed hard done by in the secret scenes that Chappies and Paul weren't talking to her, but I would say that it's more on you actually to create
Absolutely.
That bond. Firstly, you just voted out their ally. Like you are in power there. You got the jump. Like you should come forward there with like kindness and grace to them. And I also think like my clause was saying that, okay, we're a four and there are two. They'll go with numbers that make more sense rather than just being on the bottom of a bigger group. That wasn't technically correct because Santini was going to go with that group anyway. But even more so, if I'm the Amy contingent, if I'm Amy, Smash and Paul, who am I going to go with? The side that just blindsided a group and has clear allies on the other side and was in majority, or the outsiders who just got blindsided who need me more and maybe are looking for more of a home? Like, I think that obviously you're going to go with the Chappie side. So if that's the real risk, then it is on, I mean, it seemed really mostly on Kyla. So if you, if that's your option, then you have to really reach out more to them. But she thought that she could get the new members of her tribe on her side. And that was, you know, the read she had, and she was wrong with that. So she couldn't deliver on that once she'd made that decision to go in that direction.
Yeah, well, I think it's, that was such an interesting argument that Mike made, and maybe he felt like it was the only argument he could make of, look, if you're jumping over there, you're just going to be a number on the bottom. But where are you right now? Right? It's like, okay, if the argument is, oh, you're going to be jumping over to the bottom of another alliance, you're in the bottom of your current alliance. That is abundantly clear. Mike said before the swap that he wants to get rid of Chappie's next. Here, if you jump over to the other alliance, you're making inroads that are going to help you much more down the line. You know, now you can essentially say, now you have other options too of, hey, there are some Zombas I can work with, or we could come back to Vunastrong as well. I do believe that, you know, next episode that these three, I think, are still in a pretty good position of power, especially if they do end up finding an idol, as to flip flopping back and forth. So I think it was a tough argument for Mike to make, but not the right one. I think what you have to do is, again, you have to show these three that they are not at the bottom of the Vuna Alliance. Mm-hmm. And maybe that means making some faulty deals with Paul and Chappies. I don't know if they're going to see through it. It does seem that Chappies and Paul were certainly capable of like lying straight to their faces, right? Chappies at tribal council looks Mike straight in the eye and says like, yep, we're going to go along with the plan. I'm not going to vote against you. And then does just that. But essentially, I think the move here is just to show these people that they're not on the bottom of the Vunas, and that it actually is, from a positional perspective, better to stick strong than to flop over and, you know, explore these new opportunities.
But how would you show them that? Like, short of voting out Awarda as kind of like a, I don't know, some sort of peace offering, which, you know, these are real relationships. You can't just throw people under the bus. Like, I don't think there's anything that they could do short of literally sacrificing an ally. If my court goes in and goes, take out Kyla, I'm with you guys, which is just, again, not going to happen because these aren't just like random chess pieces. I don't see how they're believing that. Like, I do think that most of what Mike did wrong seems to have been, you know, in that first iteration of Vuna, because look, they came in as like the most disparate element, him and Chappies, especially, and with Kyla. And this is why I gave more Chippy points to Inesu last week, because I thought like she's central. And while they won the day and Kyla won the day, they're still on the extreme side of this chain. Like, it's not good to be so separated from people, especially in the early game, and maybe just in general, like be a central figure. So I think even if you're winning that out, it can be like an episodic win to a greater loss. And I think that everything that Mike Pauls was trying to do here was kind of like, as Rob Bentley would say, like last kicks of a dying horse. Because I thought he came at them with some logic. He came at them with, you know, okay, put trust aside, which is a difficult thing to do, but just think about what's in our best interest. Let's go real Jonathan Penner about this, real Yule kind of thoughts about this. I don't know what he really could do to bring them back in. If anything, I think his worst sin of the episode was that he seemed to really put off Amy, and she calls him, like, calculated and seems to think he's the mastermind. But with, like, the Chappies contingent, I kind of feel like the deed was done, and I don't know what he could do at that point to salvage it. I think Kyle made it worse, but I don't think he did anything in this episode to make it that much worse.
Well, so then let me ask the question, because it's been thrown around. Was Mike Claus swap screwed?
I'm so glad you asked. That's a good round. What do you think, Marion? Was he swap screwed?
I think so. I feel like maybe if he had to stay, if the swap wasn't so early, the target would have probably been on Kyla, because people would have picked up that she's a lot more strategic than Mike. And she was a lot more in people's faces. So I do believe that he got swap screwed, and I was really sad to lose him.
I do not think he was swap screwed. Because from my perspective, I think I define swap screwed as like, A, there was nothing else you could do. And yeah. B, you were in such a high and mighty position on your first tribe, and now you get like you wouldn't have been in trouble whatsoever, you know, if you had stayed in that first iteration. And with B, you know, Mike does say that he's on top. I still don't know if he would have been incredibly safe had Vuna 1.0 gone back to tribal council, just because it really does seem like, unfortunately, something he did in that early game just like turned a lot of people off to him in terms of like his shadiness and the way he was coming across. But I think we outlined a couple of options of things he could do. If anything, if Anella got voted out this episode, I would say exactly. He has a much better case of being swap screwed than Mike.
Anella would be the standard swap screwed. This guy is in control in his tribe, swaps to a 3-6 minority, is a clear big threat. Nothing he can do about that. If he gets voted out, he's, you know, textbook definition of swap screwed. I love Mike Laws, but this man was not swap screwed. Like, he came in with a 6-3 majority. He's coming in a place that was okay, but again, on the extreme, almost went home last time, like, in the fringes of things, sometimes positive fringes, but not in the middle. And for me, like, swap screwed gets thrown around too much as a term. Like, if you come in and there's nothing you can do from, like, a pure numerical standpoint of people you've never met, that to me is swap screwed. Not relationships that you've put off or, like, interpersonal dynamics that you have a part in or your allies have a part in or, like, the politics of the game that have switched around a bit with the numbers that have now become more unfortunate for you. That to me is not swap screwed. So, I mean, I couldn't say that he was swap screwed. I would say a definite no on that for me. I think it just feels unfortunate because we've gotten some questions like, what did he do? Like, go back to what went wrong. Seems like a lovely guy. Seems like a normal human being. Everyone's coming for him early. Like, he seems well-liked even in the voting confessionals, even from, like, Chappies, it's all love. Like, was it that he just was so clearly too smart for his own good? Was that, like, the reason everyone was onto him?
I don't know, Marion, as someone who, you know, played so, like, hyper-focused on the game and being able to pick up on people, right? Like, for example, you and Shane had Graham dead to rights at that merge vote, knowing he was the head of the snake. Is it really easy in the game of Survivor to just, like, make that first impression on someone and just ride it no matter how hard you might get to know them?
It's such a difficult question because, you know, when you're on that island, like, it's really not as easy as people seem. So even me, like, I don't want to judge these contestants too hard because it's like the game has evolved. It's 20 different personalities. Their surroundings and circumstances are a lot different to what ours was. But maybe Mike didn't potentially get swap screwed. I do feel like he was just maybe targeted because of who he chose to align himself with, if that makes sense.
That's an interesting one because Carla is like thrown out a lot through the episode as like the personal pick. Like, she's on causing the drama. Like, if we had our way, we'd go with Carla here. But like, Mike is the biggest threat. Like, who do you want around at the merge? Like, that's why I think that like, we heard, you know, we talked about him for an hour in the preseason. Like, we heard a long interview. Like, he's clearly smart. He can't hide it. He's the kind of person who you'll hear in the exit interview coming up. Like, you ask him a question, he gives you like 3 different well thought out answers. Like, this is the kind of, I think that he's like an obvious thinker. And I think that's like, when they're saying calculated, like, yeah, he does come across the way because he's an overthinker. Like, when they're saying mastermind, like, yes, and there's probably some identity politics in that, as Carlo was saying with Paul, just assuming he ran the blind side. Maybe that, you know, when you see a guy and girl running an alliance, you have an idea of who's in charge, even if that's not necessarily correct. But I think all of that can kind of come together to just make him seem that much more threatening. And they took out like that in their mind, the head of the snake.
Yeah, the editing was so interesting in this episode, as it has been this entire season, where I was waiting for like some sort of turn to happen after the immunity challenge where Carla gets targeted. And I'm still not sure how she wasn't, because we even seen a secret scene that Santini is telling Chappies, like, no, it's not Mike who's at the head here. This is Carla, and Carla and Warda are the two that are really making the decisions. Yet somehow it ends up being that Mike ends up going here. And I guess we'll see if it was the right choice being made or not, because, you know, Carla certainly has an opportunity to be one of those players that might be able to like slip in through the cracks where maybe Mike couldn't. But I was totally expecting, like, up until, you know, we saw some stuff post immunity challenge, that somehow this would all turn around on Carla and Carla would be the one going instead of Mike.
I can't imagine Carla slipping through cracks. Like, I feel like she's like, whatever you think about her, like, whether she's having a great episode or not a great episode, like, she is there. She's, like, front and center. You're not forgetting about her. Like, there was so much in this episode. Even, like, at the swap, she's got the thing about, hey, I'm happy to be in the majority, kind of puts that out there. Then, like, even at Tribal Council, when they asked her about whether she came for Chappie, she's like, well, they came for us too. It's like, okay, even if you're right, like, they're the swing voice. Like, you know, I feel like she just has to kind of say what's on her mind. I don't know that she's going quietly when she's losing her Mike Claws here. I don't know that she can slip through the cracks, but I feel like she'll definitely go down swinging if this is the way that it's going for Carla.
After the immunity challenge, did Carla not say something about, like, she's just going to keep quiet and not say anything?
Yeah, she said that she felt that Mike was in trouble. And so she's like, I'm going to get myself in trouble if I open my mouth and say anything. Yeah. So I'm going to stay quiet. I think that's a very good point, Mary. And that I think there maybe isn't a universe where she does end up going here. If she does end up talking a bit more, if she does do what she did last time and like be more vocal about keeping Mike there, maybe she ends up screwing herself there.
Well, but that comes, like, the context of that is there's also a secret scene before the immunity challenge where she and Michael are talking and she realizes that, like, she's probably alienated Chappies and, like, they don't have the numbers and she thinks she's kind of screwed it up. So I think that confessional probably comes off the back of, like, some regret in the way that she's played it. But I don't know if that really saved her. Like, I feel like the die was cast against Mike, which is really sad. Like, again, he's the one who's correctly giving that information about the fact that she's getting played. Like, it felt... while she saved him last week, so he, I guess, was on borrowed time, was on, like, the second of his 9 lives. It just felt, like, unjust in this episode because everything he was saying was true and clear and right. And then he paid for it, but that's Survivor.
You know, on Survivor, like, compromise is something that is very important. And I don't see Carla being able to compromise. So I agree with Shannon. I don't see how she's going to slip through the cracks next week. And should her tribe lose... I feel like she could go next.
It's definitely not looking good for her. I mean, the other person who's on the outs is obviously Wyda. We didn't get a lot from her. I think that it did kind of clarify some of the positioning from last week that Wyda was much more in that group. She seemed, especially in some secret themes, like very anti-Pinty and like what she had kind of, she said like had treated them poorly. So that was an interesting dynamic. I thought that she was like so much with that group. And I guess she also is on the outs.
Yeah, let's talk about that because... you know, there's a secret scene about it, and I think it's actually very fitting that because I talked to Pinty late in the week, this week, her interview is going to be at the end of this podcast, because I really do feel like, as we mentioned over the course of this podcast, this really was like the Pinty vote 2.0. And Mike is even complaining in a secret scene, like, why are we still talking about this? Pinty's gone. Marion, were you surprised about how much that vote sort of loomed large over what happened here, or do you think it makes sense considering what a big blindside it was to these people?
I don't know, Mike. It's just, all I can say is that Pinty was watching this episode and she called it that if they vote Mike off, Carla's going to be a little scared lamb running around. And I feel like Pinty must have been watching this week and felt a little redemption. But I don't know. This cast is so diverse. Like, I don't know how to judge them or predict what's going to happen because they just seem like such, like they're filming on the Wild Coast. They're so wild.
Yeah. Yeah. They are truly unpredictable. It's this thing where you're looking at like the 6-3 disadvantage. And I'm like, all right, let's see how much this cast can create the unpredictable outcome. And they do, right? We saw this a little bit in like millennials versus Gen X, right? Like, isn't it the stat that in every post-swap tribe, the old tribe that had the majority ends up voting one of their own out? I would not be surprised. Shannon, you laid out the dynamics on Nuna. Despite how much in a hole Kieran, Tyson, and Inesu might be, I wouldn't be surprised if we lose like a Keon or a Teresa next week because this cast is wild. They are thinking 4-dimensional, 5-dimensional, 6-dimensional chess in some of these cases. And it's making them sort of eat their own tails as a result, but it is leading to very entertaining gameplay. So I cannot complain whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that try, but I wouldn't be surprised if they lost Nicole. Like, that's where that would lead to me. Like, they're the power faction, and you've got all the outsiders that were laid out to us in Dino, Teresa, and Keon as the outsiders. Like, if I were the newbies coming into that tribe, or the tubies, as we would say, like, I would definitely be going to people who were on the outs if they have that information and going against the power group whose allies are now still making strides on the other side and not going home. So we'll definitely talk about that tribe. Marion, you said that you thought, like, stay strong with your tribe. Doesn't matter what the dynamics are. Doesn't matter if you don't like each other. Mike, what do you think about this decision from, I guess, Chappies in charge of that faction? We'll definitely talk about Santini individually, but really, like, leading, especially, like, the Paul-Chappies duo. Yes or no on switching here and flipping on an old tribe of yours?
100% yes. And I think maybe because we are advantaged to know that Mike had Chappies in his sights, You know, I think
Japanese knew that. Like, they had no, like, they seemed to like each other as people, but strategically there was nothing there.
Right, and so that's the thing, is that, like, Chappies knows, and he has evidence from these other people, that he is being gunned for. And so, considering that there was a portion of time in this episode where he may have been voted out by his quote-unquote tribal alliance, I think it makes all the sense in the world for him to flip here. As I mentioned before, I think this gives him a lot of outs with the former Zamba members as well. I think they're still in a position to possibly flip back and forth. I think there is a road where they could go to Carla and Warda next week and be like, the problem was just Mike. I think let's get rid of Amy this episode or something. We'll certainly talk about all things Amy coming up here in a little bit. Will they buy it? I'm not entirely sure, but I 100% think this is the right move. You know, this is what we see all the time in Survivor, even in like a merge sense, right? Of, hey, I was in the bottom of this alliance. Now I found a new home with people who actually appreciate me and want to work with me, as opposed to just like whispering sweet nothings into my ear while they stab me in the back. I really think this is the right move for Chappies and Paul in particular. And we'll talk about Santanie, but I love how she's playing the middle here. And I'm surprised she's playing the middle, but I think she's doing a great job at it.
Yeah, I mean, I we're on the same page today. I co-sign everything. I think Chappies like has to make that move, because I feel like it's easy for Mike Claus and Carla to come in and say, let's be Vuna strong. Like, you just voted correctly. Like, you are technically in the power position of Vuna.
Keep me at the top of the power rankings, please, for another week.
Keep the status quo where I vote correctly out of your allies. No, for them, like, they weren't in the majority. They've got some, like, middle allies who are on the other tribe who, in their mind, not in a good position. Obviously, in the 3-6, you cannot vouch for those people. So if those people are going to get picked off on the other side, are you just going to be left with this group who you don't trust? Like, I think you got to pretty much start again, try to make new alliances, new bonds, new relationships that could possibly help you later at Emerge. So I can't really see them flip-flopping. I think maybe getting closer to Emerge, they could take out a big threat like Smash or Amy. But I still think, like, this has to be the start of something, like something very real to me, because I don't think they have a lot of options. So flip-flopping to me, I don't think that they have kind of enough security to have that fluidity. I think they need like a new home, new family, old allies might get voted out of the other tribe. These, you know, other Vuna members, not good for them either. Try and make some real relationships and stick with it for a bit, which would be where I would go for Chappies. But I definitely do think, like, good move for Chappies there. I want to talk about Santanie, because I feel like She's killing it. And I think we can all co-sign that she's just having an absolutely great game. This was a ball episode from her.
She is incredible. I am such a fangirl. And it's very rarely that I
You're
fangirl.
A
I'm a fantasy. Oh my God.
Fantasy is what
that.
They're calling it, I think. Yeah.
She's just great. She knows the game. You can see that she's a real fan, but you can also, like, she's keeping her composure and her head on, as opposed to like a lot of other players. She's not emotional. She thinks things through. She doesn't give away too much information. Like, I just want to hug her. I'm so proud of her.
Yeah, this was a really good episode for her. And like we talked last episode about, you know, she was in a unique position, right? Who knows if she would have gone at that first tribal council or if the die was already cast for Pinty, but she ends up, you know, making her way into a very powerful position, even more so maybe than Chappies and Paul, in that it seems like everyone thought they had her vote, to the point where when Mike is voted out, he doesn't think that Santanie betrayed him. He actually thinks that Carla was the one to vote against him. And so I think we talked about that last week with how, you know, Pinty thought that Anesu and Tyson are not the ones to vote against her. I do think that says a lot in what, you know, Santanie was able to do. There's actually a really telling secret scene this week where Santanie says that she actually loves playing the middle and playing by herself specifically, because it's sort of like, well, you know, now if I don't really have a hard, fast commitment to anybody, then that means that I can play much more fun and not worry about hurting other people's feelings. So I think swing vote Santanie is here to stay with, who knows, like, there was a chance she might have had 3 idols at one point. So, like, talk about going from 0 to 60 in the course of 2 episodes.
Yeah, I think that confessional was actually in the episode. Like, I love that confessional from her, because she's watching a duo, you know, where, like, Mike Claus is possibly going for his relationship with Carla, and she could possibly go for her relationship with him. Like, I think she's saying, like, being so tied down to one person and so emotionally invested can be really, like, it's something that inhibits you in the game. Whereas for her, she's so fluid. Like, even when it was going to be the numbers against Chappies, she has most of her relationship with Chappies, but she was willing to go where the going was good. Then they swapped it. She was like, great, I'd prefer that, but it wasn't going to stop me. So I think she's killing it. I think the only knock I could say against her game is that she doesn't currently have three idols in her pocket, because that was a sincere possibility, in that we know that she got a clue to both camps' idols and obviously a tribal council. I feel like someone like Tony has, you know, who she wanted to base her game on. Oh no, she wanted David. But again, someone like David, you know, one has three idols in his pocket right now. But besides that, I just think the fact that so many factions, three factions here, one of them was going to win out. We didn't know earlier in the episode, she was always going to be on the right side of the vote. I kind of see her as like what Anesia was last week, and Chappies is more of like the Carla. But he, yes, did well, won the day, but there's like a little bit of antagonism there, that maybe some of that negativity you don't want, having someone in the game like Carla against Chappies, not great for you to have any of that negativity. She's just like around. She's just like positive and good and in with the numbers. And I just think like the beauty of time and some power and some information in the game to win this for her and to get her into such a good spot where she could already be out of the game if something like Immunity Island didn't exist.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, I saw some similarities, Marion, a bit, and especially in the beginning of the game, between Centony and someone like Sonette, just in terms of like maybe their archetype, maybe the fact that they were like more of a physical liability. I mean, let's remember back when Mark Fish deemed her one of the people that would be most immediately voted out of the tribe. But I think what's very different is obviously in a swap situation, you know, you ended up voting out Sonette. Because like both due to weakness and because of the fact that maybe she was not as well connected as the other people in your alliance. But I think Santini is able to make up for that weakness due to the fact that she is so like tight with everybody. It seems there is social brokering there, that social capital that we mentioned before, which I think might help. You know, maybe there's a chance somewhere down the line where like if Tuba is losing all the challenges, they're like, let's just get rid of Santini. But I think right now, and especially with this cast, I don't know how many people right now are saying, oh yeah, we've obviously got to get rid of her, even though we trust her. She's someone who's dragging us down on the challenges.
I just can't imagine how they would get rid of her. Like, she just is so close to everyone. She's having like the personal relationship and conversations with Amy. She's like so close to Chappie. She's like offering them things. She has information. She's getting idols to the other side. Like, I would think that they would just vote out, again, like members of those other factions and kind of go to war with each other before they throw someone like Santini to the wolves just because she's like weaker in the challenges.
I think one thing that's really counts in Santoni's favor is that she's so adaptable.
Yes.
Like you mentioned, she didn't necessarily want to vote Chappies out, but had it came to that, she would have, without being too emotional. So the fact that she's adaptable and she's able to manage her emotions, I think is really going to count in her favor this season. And like she's just like she's phenomenal. Like, I have nothing bad to say about Santoni.
I think as well, like, the one word that comes up, and it's something that we've said before on this podcast, and it's something we said a lot on Survivor South Africa Champions, is underestimated. Like, you know, the same way that Chappies was underestimated here, like in your season, Siva was underestimated time and time again, and it's great. It's like everyone gifts you the element of surprise that you don't even need to do anything about it because they're offering you that secrecy. And that's what she has here. That's why my cause thinks that, you know, it wasn't her that slipped, because he can't even imagine that she would do that. She's just playing beyond what they could expect. And I think that's just like a wonderful gift to have in the game. Like, let everyone completely underestimate you and then surprise them. And they'll be surprised, you know, when they watch it on TV. So I think she's got that going for her as well.
And have like 2 to 3 idols in your pocket, which I will, I will say, let's continue on the rant that we went on last week about even more how OP that trip to Immunity Island was, that apparently the clue that she won to the, or no, that she found behind the sign, right, to the idol back at camp, works at both camps. That is wild to me. That, to your point,
that is Shannon, insane.
Yeah, that she now has, like, she has one that she can access at any time, as long as nobody takes it before she does. She has one that somehow she and her allies haven't found yet, and she has one that she was able to tip off someone else to find. Which we'll talk about that choice as well. Again, if we're talking about how splintered Vuna was, you know, the choice to save Tyson or to save that contingent is incredibly interesting. But yeah, that's a little too overpowered for my taste.
Oh, wait, not a little.
That's a lot of power. I just want to ask, Are these contestants waiting for clues to find idols? Are they not just like going out and digging from day one? Because I don't think we saw anything in episode one or two. Like, are they waiting to be like be fed clues to find the idol? Or
I'm sure they're looking. Happening? But, like, I'm not sure that like we would necessarily see. I mean, we did see them look through like the, you know, the rice, for example. But obviously, you know, you have to kind of maybe even. I don't even know if it's.
No, well, remember, Anella's looking through the freaking Future Life bars.
That's
in this
true.
Episode, right?
Okay, like,
people are doing it. Here's my hunch. I would not be surprised if the idols were only hidden after the clues were discovered.
Yeah.
That they sort of prevented like the Russell Hance effect of, okay, just start digging around. Like, I know Russell was often mentioned in your season, Marion, but this idea of like, okay, let's just go around digging in trees. I'm sure people were absolutely looking ASAP, but I would not have been surprised if production said, okay, once you find the clue, then we'll put the idol in the game. Because then, I mean, it's really incredible that the very first idol of the game was found in episode 3. I feel like that is never said in modern Survivor. Usually it's episode 1 right off the bat.
Right, but like how much is that just us as viewers getting super lucky? Like right now, Santini has a clue to Tribal Council. She has one at her own beach, a clue that they can't find that they're looking for, and she's like gifted one to Tyson. All right, we can live with that. I can't see how this isn't a thing that couldn't have happened. Like, this isn't something production prevented. Like, you do get someone like a Tony who, out of Tribal Council, here it is in my pocket. Oh, now I'm near the well. I don't care if anyone sees me. That's me. That's the risk I take. That's the kind of player I am. Oh, I've gone. Oh, I've now swapped. Oh, great. Now I'm on Nuna. And now I have another one. Or what? No, that would have to be on Tuba. Anyway, I'm on Tuba. I've got my third idol in the space of 24 hours. And I've won the game. Like, that's a game winning. That's like a game winning discovery for one trip to Immunity Island. It's like way too much.
Especially in comparison to what happens in Immunity Island here.
Yeah.
Which it's like the complete opposite for poor Amy. Though I won't say poor Amy, because Amy, what are you doing?
Yeah, okay. Well, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about that like third faction of Smash. We're calling Anella or Smash. Can we make a decision on this? Like, I put in my notes half-half. I don't know, because it was so confusing. And we never heard Smash, and now he is Smash. Anyway, Smash?
I like Smash.
We've got Smash, we've got Amy, we've got Sean. They come in here, new group. Get sent to Immunity Island. Mike, you have a connection with Immunity Island this week. Tell the listeners.
So as Shannon and I mentioned in the very beginning, she and I were production consultants over the course of this. Essentially, our meeting with LaRue was that we talked through the various advantages and disadvantages that can be presented at Immunity Island. And what we really put forward, we talked about this before, is we didn't want it to all be game advantages. We did not want this to be Santini the season where there are 5 idols and 3 extra votes and 2 vote nullifiers and a person.
So 3 idols that you can get in the space of 12 hours. I don't know.
Exactly.
Like we tried our best. Yeah.
So I know Shannon and I were both very vocal about like, let's put in some non-game advantages. And I do believe this was my idea to come up with this idea of, okay, if you win the challenge, you get to raid 3 items from the other tribe. If you lose, the other tribe raids 3 items from you. And let me just say, I am so excited for next week because this is going to be incredibly dramatic. Tuba's just going to have a random person show up and say, give me your things. I'm sorry, this just has to be. Amy's going to wind up in trouble. That's another interesting, I think, advantage / disadvantages of staying and playing at Immunity Island is like, now you have to come up with a story, right? Because it's not just that you're immune. It's that like, okay, you also either have an advantage or a disadvantage. So you have to come up with it. Whereas if you give up and go, you didn't do anything. You don't have to come up with any sort of story. I think next week is really going to hinge on what Amy's going to say about what happened. So I'm really intrigued to get everyone's thoughts, but I have to question multiple things for Amy. A, the decision to stay and play. And B, from what it seems like next week, like, why not tell the truth?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the game was for a tribal reward. Why do you not say, hey, I was working on behalf of the group. I want to win those pillows and blankets or whatever that we just lost. Why feel like you have to go through saying, oh, well, no, it was out of my hands. I couldn't do anything.
Well, I mean, I feel like I want to see it play out before I criticize her. And that may be like a hot take for me. But I do think that it all stems from the incorrect decision to stay and play in the first place for me from Amy, because I came into the Muni Island section wanting to give Amy 3 points at this episode, 3 cheesy points. Like, she made great relationships. She's talking to Chappie. She's talking to Santini. She's like in the section that looks like maybe has like a lot of different options. Obviously she's been sent to Muni Island, got strong relationships on the other side. Chappie says to her, and Chappie's a potential swing vote at that point. Yes! He comes a swing vote. He's like, don't need your vote. She's like, yep. And I was like, how can there possibly be another way to look at this? Then I know for a fact, because I paused it, and yes, it was an immunity necklace in the way, but I read it, and it is the structure. Every week, you can see what you're wagering. You can see what the task is before you choose. And she chooses to stay. And I just feel like, how is this the move? Because I can't understand the fear of swapping to minority, of meeting these people yesterday, 6 of them against 3 of you, not knowing how it's going to go, being the dumbest person in survivor history to give up immunity and they get voted out by 6 people you didn't know 2 days ago. I get that fear. But then I also feel like she's reading it correctly, that they do have an in. You go back. You lawyer up against Mike Laws. You put your lawyer power to bring over people. You have an immunity necklace. You give it to Chappies. You form something here. You create something here. A new relationship with this group. You don't let it go to smash. That's not what we're doing. Not like she was right that he could do it. She read it correctly, but it's more than that. It's not even about needing her vote. It's about needing her time and her voice and her promise to Chappies not to lose her vote. If I was Chappies, I don't know that I'd be working with that. Yeah. Because he very explicitly asked her not to lose her vote. And then she immediately chose to lose her vote. And then, on top of that, read that it would be a tribe advantage versus a tribe detriment. Great twist, Mike. And that's what she was putting them up. And I think that because it's been 2 individual people in Teresa and Santini to go, we haven't been able to put as fine a point on it that staying and playing is a selfish decision a lot of the time, and giving up and go is selfless. I think when you put it as well in a tribe context, it looks even more selfish, and considering she did leave her group in the lurch and a new alliance to do this all without her, I think that makes it look even more selfish. So I agree, don't lie. I'll watch it play out. But I can understand why she might want to, because she's in hot water because this was the wrong decision to begin with.
I agree, Shannon, but I also feel like she was, Amy was more concerned with hurting her previous tribe than she is with hurting a current one.
And that's worrying too, for other reasons. That's worrying too.
The only thing that I can think that's going to count in her favor is that her current tribe doesn't have a top, because can you imagine if they had that top?
Yeah, so, and that's the other thing as well, is actually, so I remember, I can't remember, Shannon, like which came first, this twist or the fact that they did the reward challenge for individual items, but they really go hand in hand, right? Because it's going to be so deliciously cruel when a tribe wins like the blankets and pillows and then immediately they lose them 2 days later. So yeah, I mean, Marion, what did you think about the decision that Amy makes, even besides like the lying stuff, but the decision to stay and play despite the promise that she made to Chappies?
I'm just like imagining, just after my 10 minute rant of Marianne's, like, I loved it. Like, okay, I want to hear your choice, because clearly I have feelings about it. I want to know what you think.
I think if it was like the first or second vote, I would have probably stayed and played. I'm not going to lie. But I feel like if I was in Amy's position, I would have gone back, because number one, I'm in the minority and I need to prove myself to these people. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to be like, I'm loyal to you. I could have gotten a personal advantage, but I wanted to show you I'm a team player. And I would have maybe like spoken it up to make myself seem, you know, that I'm in with you. But I agree with you, Shannon. I think she made the wrong choice this week.
I just cannot get over Chappie's, the swing vote, tells her to her face, do not stay and play. She says, okie dokie, you got it, boss. And then proceeds to stay and play. I just, maybe she ended up backing into the correct read and that Chappies was still sticking with the plan no matter what. But there is absolutely a scenario where Chappie sees Amy walk in with that necklace around her neck. Also starts doing the math, realizes like, okay, now we have one less vote. What could that mean? And says like, what? No, now I don't want to work with you because you've proven yourself to like immediately break my trust.
Yeah. I mean, again, like easiest thing to say from our couch. This woman just got swapped to be with 6 people she'd never met. Yes, they're telling her they all want to work with her, but like you don't know these people from Adam. Like you have no idea what's going on. So I do understand that. She was correct won the day. It's not about the numbers. They had a 6-2, a 3 with it, but 5-2, a 3 without it. She's okay numerically. I think it's just more like the action that, like, 5 seconds ago, this guy said to you, don't lose your vote. And then me, the first thing you do is betray him. Like, again, like, when you start these relationships, these swap tribes, these new bonds, like, is that the way to start this? Like, even if they did win out here, even if it was so bad between, like, the Mike Carla contingent and Chappie that he needed new relationships, I still think that that's not a great way to start. Like, that's a fracture where it could just be, it could be something great. Like, you want to come in here with a new tribe where you were on the outs. Give Chappie's immunity. It's perfect. Show him that you're so willing. You asked me to give him my vote. I give up immunity for you. There is no question. You'd be the evilest person ever to vote on me or my allies right now. I just feel like it would be so bold. Yes, it would be risky. Yes, it would be the brave choice. But I just think, like, how not? I actually was shocked that I couldn't believe. I was like, oh, because I had heard that it was going to be Mike's advantage. I'm like, how sad for Mike that his advantage or disadvantage isn't going to come into play here. That's literally the point I was at. And then she goes, and I'm like, oh, great. We're going to see Mike's advantage. But I will say that being able to rant about this is why I love the twist, why I love Immunity Island, because I love giving these people difficult decisions, things that are fairly balanced, and then just absolutely roasting them for what they do. So, yeah, I had fun with it.
Yeah, I love it. It was the right read for the wrong reasons, right? And here's the other thing as well. I'm curious about, like, who in the former Zomba members do we give credit for? Obviously, we can write off Sean, because Sean was surprisingly a non-entity in this episode, which is stunning considering everything that happened with him in episode one. But Amy at Immunity Island says, like, oh, one of the reasons why I want to stay is because I think Smash is going to be mm-hmm. able to, like, do the work and get everyone together. I feel like we don't see that, but should we be, like, are we giving Amy the most credit out of those three for being able to, you know, get Chappie, Centony, and Paul to their side? Or did Smash indeed do some stuff to help keep that six together?
Oh, I credit Smash. I mean, I have to, because she said, like, I'm putting the faith in his hands by staying here. So, like, she wasn't there, and they did get it done. And I also know from social media, Carla tweeted this, it was also mentioned in a secret scene that in the season that I think they should just call Survivor High School, Smash and Paul know each other from preseason. So I feel like maybe that's a missing piece in all of this. Do every single person on this cast know each other? Is that what this, I don't understand what's going on.
I want to ask Marion, because we had Rob Bentley on here, who revealed the stunning amount of people that knew each other preseason on his season. Was there anyone from Champions who knew each other preseason?
No, but I will give you some some tea. So when I did my audition, Shane was actually, I was number 24. He was number 25. So I knew his face from standing in the audition line. And when I went into audition, they asked me, was there, like, anyone that you saw in the line that you think could be a potential person to be on the show? And I was like, it's going to be Shane, this guy that stood. I didn't know his name. I was like, number 25, you're going to cast, he's great.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw Shane for the first, like, on the island, I was like, oh, my God, here we go. So from my season, no, I knew Shane from standing in the line, but it's very weird how much connection, like, pre-season connections that this cast has.
Yeah. I don't know, Mike, who do you credit? Like, you credit Amy in this?
It's tough because, again, like, if we're just watching the edited show,
she did well before Immunity Island.
And that's the tough thing as well. Like, not to spoil the chizzy, I have such a tough time placing Amy here, right? Because, like, how much does the decision that she made at Immunity Island negate the really
everything.
Good work?
It negates everything. She went from 3 points to me to not even an honorable mention because it was just such the wrong choice.
She did such good work here. Now, I know. It seemed like Chappie's and Paul knew that Carla was sort of, like, not really on the same game, but, like, she does a great job of, I think, really, particularly with Chappie's, who seemed to be, like, presented as the figurehead of that alliance, for her to come to him and be like, listen, let me be the first in here. I want us to work together. And it seemed like Chappie was more appreciative of that argument than the Vuna argument. I think that was incredibly adept on Amy's part. You know, you talk about Centony as the Inesu of Tuba. A secret scene says that Amy apparently was the Inesu of Zomba. She reveals that she had this alliance with Rainier. She has an alliance with Smash. She has an alliance with Rainier and Smash. And she had the three women. So, like, she is by far the most well-connected, which maybe goes back to that comment she made about how she didn't want to like screw over anybody on the other tribe because they were her friends. So like she did so much good. Yeah. And then like the last 15 minutes of the episode is just nonsensical decision making.
She like rant aside, she's an excellent player. You know, she as we and I gave her choosy points from that week one for that reason, because she did seem like the connector of that of Zamba. She comes in here, she does the same thing. She must be like the most charismatic person alive, you know, linking these people, and she's got great reads, and Smash is a little wary about Santini because she's a double agent. She's like, no, she's a double agent, but she's, you know, with the side. She's reading even the complexities. Great stuff. I just cannot reward the decision. But yes, in general, I think great. But now how will she rally from this decision with the Mike Bloom created punishment that she was about to have as well? So I do hope it doesn't torpedo a game. I mean, like, what about Sean? I don't know. Well, we've seen a little bit from Sean. I feel like not a lot in this episode, but he is doing stuff. Like, Rania credits him as one of his main allies when he's going to the other side. Like, he is in the group. I think he definitely like went up a few notches since we last saw him, above like the Dinos, Therese, or Keon even. So there might even be some stuff there. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Marianne, I know we didn't see any of Sean, but I gotta ask your opinion on this guy, right? Like, how would you have reacted if you were on Zamba and you see Sean doing what he did in that first tribal council? Are you trying to get rid of him immediately, or like in this season, like, are you trying to bring him in somehow?
I kind of feel that Sean would be the first person I'd align myself with.
I called him Shane in the preseason, so I love that you're saying that and validating. Yeah. Well, he's a crazy Shane, though.
I actually said, like, imagine Shane and Sean on the same tribe. Like, that would be cool.
He's like the funhouse mirror version of Shane. That's what it is.
Absolutely. Like, I feel like he'd be the person I'd align myself with. In the first tribal council, he tried to save himself. I don't care how it came across. He did what he needed to do. And sometimes in Survivor, that's what you need to do. Sometimes you need to swallow your pride. Sometimes you need to throw your pride away. You just need to know when to do what. And I love him. And I really hope that we do get to see more of him.
Yeah, I mean, he was left out of the five, so that wasn't great as well. When they're like, this is going to be our new group, and they could have been a six, and he wasn't. So, I know, we can't say enough. I'm going to have to give, yeah, I guess, like, Amy started it and Smash finished it off, I would say, for that group, getting it done pretty well. But, Mike, I'm excited to see how your advantage plays out. Like, I think another thing, other than just making it not super game-related, we want a thing to kind of have an immediate impact so that you're not keeping track of things like 3-4 episodes in the future. And this next episode, it seems it's going to revolve around you a lot. I love that. I'm so excited about that.
I know. I'm really, you know, not to pat myself on the back too much. I really like the inherent drama that comes with it. Because no matter what the
I love this idea you say about your own idea. Yeah,
no matter what the outcome is, like, there's drama involved, right? Either you are stealing from your opposition or the opposition is stealing from you. There's drama in what's the choice that someone makes, right? Because we saw this all the time in Survivor Pearl Islands, as to sometimes people took the tarp and like really struck at the heart of the other tribe. Sometimes they just took like a couple of items to really be nice to people. Cause also remember, this is a wild cast. As Marianne said, this also might be an opportunity for them to foster cross tribal alliances too. Right. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about all the stuff with the idol clue whispering. Could this be an opportunity where someone from Nuna goes to visit Tuba and like, there's a little bit of whispering going on, right? Of like, oh, by the way, Tyson found the idol. This is where it's located. You know, there's still a chance that that type of stuff can happen as well. So I love cross tribal stuff. I know you do too, Shannon. And this is going to be also one of those rare storylines that like carries over as well. So I mean, thank you, Amy, for playing the game. I will say that it did feel like an uphill battle, unfortunately, for her too, as well. That puzzle did not look easy, even just from like the weight of the puzzle pieces.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing with the 5-piece puzzle. You either get it, like, I think, immediately, like, Spencer Bledsoe style, or not at all. And she did seem, as Marianne said, pretty reticent to win and doom some of her old allies to being raided by her tribe.
Yeah, I think if Rania goes over to do the raid, it probably wouldn't be that bad, because he would then, you know, keep Amy in mind. But but if someone that wasn't on her initial tribe goes over, I don't think they're going to care as much. So it'd be interesting next week to see who they actually send to do the raid.
It's interesting because I think maybe where we should look is the decision to send Amy to Immunity Island.
Yeah.
Right? We talked about this last week as to, okay, maybe now you're not going to necessarily send your weakest person. I think we saw this in season 7, right, where Rob was able to convince his tribe essentially to like send Sipe and essentially protect her from possibly being voted out next. I think this was, I don't know who to credit for this. You would assume it was Rainier who wanted to protect Amy. It seems like in the secret scene that Dino was the one to put the idea forward. But essentially like this idea of saying, well, let's send Amy, because then that definitely means that they're going to be voting out one of Smash or Sean, who's a strong guy. Like, I think that's a really compelling argument for the Zomba majority to say, well, we want to make sure a former Zomba goes, so let's send Amy.
Yeah, because I thought it was interesting that I did credit Rainier, and I thought it was interesting that he like really put his foot down to go Amy instead of Smash when he's so aligned with them both. But in the secret scene, they seemed a little bit more transparent about it being like, all right, so if they send her, then because Paul and Smash are like such assets to the tribe, maybe they'll vote out none of them, and then we can actually get a fracture going. Whereas like when it was kind of all packaged together and they are staying in front of the other tribe as well, and like in this really open forum, even though kind of everyone was there when they were talking about it in the secret scene, but when they're like really putting it down, they're saying like, yeah, now it's for tribe strength, because if Amy goes and like imagine voting out Smash or Sean, like definitely weakens them. So it was a smart argument. I thought it was still a little funny because it's still really transparent, right? Like Rainier's in charge, so that's the power structure. He's clearly aligned with Amy. You can see what you want to see, but I admired the effort to, you know, to at least a little bit lie about it and be like, tribe strong for us. Yeah, I can't wait till they vote out Smash. That'll be a victory for me as Rainier.
Yeah, and Marion, I want to talk about all this stuff with the like, but the cross tribal things, because you were the one that really picked up on poor Cornet slipping Jenna that idol, and you know, really.
Did we not see that in this episode exactly? Like, I feel like
that's the thing. I want to ask, like, what the similarities are. You know, do you credit, ironically enough, of all people, Dino for being able to pick up on the fact that, you know, Tyson and Paul are whispering to each other, and that clearly something's up?
Yeah, I think the fact that Dino's such a super fan definitely counted to his advantage picking that up. And like I said, with swaps, I feel generally people should or are necessarily going to stick to what they know. But with this cast, like, they're wild. I actually don't know what to say about them.
I want to say with Dino, yes, he's observant, he's a super fan. Counterpoint, though, what was happening was Dino always knows when Paul is talking to the other tribe.
Was Dino jealous? Like, oh my God, Paul's talking to someone else and not to me.
Yeah, Dino must have been like, wait, what? Like, I literally asked you for help and you pretended I don't exist. Now you're literally helping someone from the other tribe in the middle of a challenge. This is such a hurtful betrayal, Paul.
That's the problem, though. I think Paul can only talk to people when he's wrestling them. He was not wrestling Dino in the moment. I think if Dino, like, threw himself into a headlock with Paul, then maybe Paul would speak with him. He's playing hard to get.
Now, that would be a TV moment if he just, like, tackles him in the middle of the puzzle. That's what I, like, that was my favorite part about it. I was like, this is someone who, like, pleaded with Paul a couple of episodes ago, and now Paul is literally doing it. Paul, of all people.
This was wild to me. And I love the way that it was edited, that like, despite this big physical challenge, it almost took a backseat to first Anthony telling Paul, okay, by the way, like, this is what the clue is. First Paul being like, why did you not tell me about this sooner? Which is a good point. She does end up telling Chappies earlier in the day. And Paul's like, you could have told me. I could have found this idol. But then him trying to like Russell Hance, Colby JT style, trying to come off sneaky, and in true Paul fashion, just like completely being incredibly obvious to the opposition.
Yeah, such a corny moment. I mean, like, look, even Tyson says, he's like, look, they probably saw it, but I got what I wanted. Rainier literally gives the play-by-play. I mean, Tyson, we'll have to talk about Tyson this as well, but he's like, he gave him the clue, he went out, he found the idol, that's what's happening. Like, that's not the best thing, but I guess if you're desperate, like, rather have an idol people know about. And I actually think people knowing about it could be a good thing, because one idol between three people, not great. If I was a Nessa and Kieran, I'd be like, I'm going to go home on the split. Like, they've seen six people. Yes, Teresa doesn't have a vote at the next time. I'd be looking like, three votes coming my way. He has an idol. I'm out. But I do think, like, in such a complicated season like Immunity Island, where votes are disappearing and someone's going to meet Immunity Island and Teresa doesn't have a vote as an example, like, There's some scary, complicated stuff happening. And if someone does have an idol and it necessitates a split vote and it puts fear into people's hearts that they maybe will, you know, put it on the wrong target and get idoled out, that could cause the fracture in a group that is already pretty unstable. So I think it's like, how are they going to use it? Is Tyson going to be so suspicious that he unifies a fracture group against him? Because I could see that happening too, because they should not be unified, but they all kind of seem to kind of have the number on Tyson. Or is it going to be like, hey, I don't need another excuse to not vote with these people I don't really like, if I'm like a Keon or a Sharice or Dino. And I also don't want to put my votes on someone who has an idol probably, or on any of his group that he could give the idol to. So I think you have to use it in that like powerful, scary way rather than like individually.
Yeah, Marion, I'm so intrigued to hear about this from you, because once upon a time, you know, you were in a powerful duo that had idols, and Shane did intend to play his idol on you. Do you think Tyson will do the same here? Do you think if he's not in trouble and someone like a Nesu is, he would play the idol on her?
I don't think so. I don't see Tyson giving that idol away, because he does say, I can protect myself, or something to those lines. I don't see him easily giving that idol away unless, you know, a Nesu gets to him and she asks him. Or like, you know, because she's so aware of the game that I think she'd be able to read where the vote is going, because she's so like, she's so graceful in this game. Like, I have to give her credit. She's such an incredible social player. Like, she picks up on a lot. But honestly, I don't see Tyson handing that idol over. A question that I do have is if Renea and Dino saw that Tyson was being fed information, why weren't they following Tyson around all day?
Yeah, I mean, again, that's something out of like your playbook, right? And that was the whole thing with the Jenna idol, is that you came up with this whole scheme to lead everyone away, or to lead her away, and then you went and stole the idol. Obviously, they're not allowed to do that here. But you would imagine that like the plan that Sean and Smash concoct, right, of, oh, Sean leads everyone away and then Smash goes looking for an idol clue. I'm a little surprised. I agree that at least one of them, one of the former Zomba people, was not like tailing Tyson or being like, oh, I'll go to the water well with you just to see what'll happen.
I mean, we got this question from the listeners, and I feel like I have a possible explanation. And that would be like, you just met this guy, and like, it's a social game of people at the end of the day. Like, I think it sounds easy enough to be like, look, Tyson obviously got something in literally the challenge that we swapped in. We will follow him till he leaves the game. But I think as well, like, you have to be cognizant of the fact that, like, I don't know, you want to create relationships with these people. You want to not like make it like a police state where he's just going to like hate his time so much that you alienate this person so far from you where you never know what's going to happen. Maybe you swap again, you never go to tribal council and he just hates you. Like, I think that if he's saying, I'm going to the bathroom or I'm going on my own, yes, maybe follow him. But also know exactly what he's up to. Have all the information, plan for it, plan around it without breathing down his neck. And I think like in a social game, just being so antisocial in that sense.
Can we talk about as well the choice that Paul and Santini made? Because it really shows like what a difference a day makes, that as soon as they swap, you have Paul and Santini saying, okay, you know, let's protect Tyson, let's protect Kieran, let's protect Inesu, let's tell them about this idol. Cut to like later in the day, yeah, let's get rid of one of Kieran's allies. And maybe it's just a specific thing about like the Mike and Carla duo that they didn't want to work with. But I just find it so interesting that it's, all right, we're going to protect our Vuna friends by giving them an idol clue, but also screw Vuna. I want to vote out Mike.
Yeah, but like, I think Carla and Mike felt that separate. And I think Kieran was like even more in the middle, and Inesu definitely, you know, alliances with everyone, and Tyson even closer to that side. So I do see that. I mean, I think quick thinking from Santini to maximize her clue, if you can't get it anymore, empower people on the other side that you at least have relationships with when they're in a minority against six people you've never met. I can see it. I don't know if I would have thought to do it because it wasn't necessarily like a chappies for her, but I think that, you know, she got some positive out of that.
Yeah, I would have, if I was in, you know, it's so easy to say if I was in someone else's shoes, but I would have thought that like they would maybe have like a buddy system that everyone at all times are like tailing Tyson, sorry.
Tailing.
But But the buddy system is so antisocial. Like that, you know, like that's like, that's like the, like that's my point. It's like, that's
Shannon, you're talking to like the Boston Rob number one super fan here. She's going to go with the buddy system no matter what.
I know, but like, I'm just like, the buddy system, it works for Boston Rob, but he rules with fear. Like, it's not congenial. And it's like, is that the game you want to play if you are a Rhaenyra or some of these people that are in charge where you're like, that's Tyson's life in this game now, that like, you will never let him be alone to find this thing, because that just feels like you're just crushing, not just relationship with him, but like Inesu and with Kieran and possibly their allies on the other side. It just feels like very extreme to me, and also like impossible to do. You're never going to let this guy go to the bathroom from now until forever. Like, it's going to happen. Just know it's happening and be aware and plan for it, I assume.
All that being said, I think... It's tough, because I do agree with Marion to a certain extent that like Tyson does seem like an incredibly individualistic player. I wonder if he's able to like get by without playing the idol. Like, if he makes it to post-merge with the idol, he's absolutely playing it for himself. But I could see a scenario here where he plays it for Inesu or Kieran. I think he wound up with two of the people that he would most likely play an idol on. Right? Inesu, who he seems to be incredibly tied with, and Kieran, who he went to freaking high school with somehow.
He is above him. Come on, Mike. That's like the least connectedness of this tribe.
But I think that maybe it's because, you know, I'm just having that in my mind, like that comment that Tyson made last episode about how information is currency and I have all the information, about if he was given an opportunity to keep those connections alive and continue to get that information funneled to him, I could absolutely see him playing that idol to protect that group, even if it leaves himself more vulnerable. I'm not sure why. That's just like the read I get of Tyson at the moment, but I could absolutely see a certain side of Tyson that might snake someone, if it came down to him versus someone else.
I think the way I would play it and what I think Tyson could be good enough to do would just be to use it for the group but yourself. Like, you can use it as a threat. You can use it as a power. You can show it to someone like Adina and be like, hey, don't like roll the dice, you know, trying to split votes, or like, you know, you don't have enough numbers necessarily, or we'll like pull someone over on the split. Like, why risk it? Come with us. We'll get a majority. You know, Dino, Keon, hopefully they understand the dynamics to resource and know how on the ass these people were, and just use that fear that I could play for anyone, and not necessarily having to do that, but still using it for his group to kind of get more of the numbers back. Because even playing the idol one time on one person, that's like an episodic win, but finding the fracture and creating the group, as, you know, Amy and Smash will tell you, that's like the long-term solution that they need to find.
Right. It'd be like a short term versus a long term thing. Long term, hopefully you don't have to use the idol at all. You can use it more so as like a cudgel without never actually using it. Short term is like, all right, this will help survive the vote. We get rid of one of the majority that's really like a key cog. Maybe someone like a Nicole, for example, who gets like a pop of airtime. I actually thought for a portion of the episode that Nicole might be the one going, just because of how much we've seen of her. And then the group is so splintered after that, that you don't even need the idol. Then you're in the majority.
Yeah. I mean, look, Nicole, I wouldn't be surprised if her days are numbered just based on the group of these outsiders that could come together. And based on some of the editing, like, Marion, I'm keen to get your perspective. We see this conversation between the blondes, which is really played out from the preseason coverage, and Teresa. And I know there's been a lot of discussion about it online. Like, I kind of see this like, you know, am I the asshole? Like, that's how I was reading this. Like, who's in the wrong here? You know, like that, the Reddit subreddit of am I the asshole? Who did you see as like in the wrong here, Marion, in this conversation between Teresa and mostly Nicole?
I want to say the Spice Girls.
Spice?
I feel like they were, I don't know if condescending is the word. I feel like, yeah, they were three and Teresa was one. But I mean, she ultimately, from being a trio, she could then be like a solid four, like maybe approach her a little bit more. They did come on like quite threatening, like Teresa asked, like, is this a threat? So it was kind of like a Spice Girls versus Mean Girls scene.
Yeah, oh my god, someone should edit, like, not that they were like meme and girls, but like in terms of like the three blondes, like you have like Nicole's Regina George, Amy could be, I don't know, I guess Gretchen Wieners, or you get Marisha in. I mean, look, I think it's a lot when you see like three versus one. Mike, do you agree?
I think they're all wrong.
Yeah, everyone sucks here. Yeah, everyone's like, that's what it is, right? That's
my I think Mary makes a great point that I think, I mean, I talked about this all the time last season. It's content versus intent. And the content of the scene is just like, hey, we want to work with you. And that seems fine on paper. But I think the intent behind both sides of the conversation was not good. I think to like the Nicole side of things, I think like the reaction, almost like taking offense to, oh, we're a trio, being like, oh, no, why would you even say that? We can be a girl group. I think was a little like the lady doth protest too much. But I have no idea what Teresa is doing here. Why on earth is she saying to their face, well, you're going to have to do something for me. Three people, you're going to have to do something for me to trust you. Like, no, you are on the bottom. You are super observant. You know you are. What the move to do, I think, is say yes, but then have that in the back of your head of like, I said yes, but I'm really going to have to look out to see how much they want to include me in this. Don't say what you're thinking. We learned this from Pinty last week. I don't know why Teresa did that this week.
Yeah, like they, you know, you need them more than they need you right now. Like Nicole is mostly right. It's like, we have the power. You know, you don't really get to say that to us, which is largely true. But everyone needs everyone, as you'll find in the swap. Nicole could be in trouble now. Like, definitely don't burn relationships on either side. So I would agree that like everyone did the wrong thing. Teresa should not be putting down demands where she has nothing to demand, and she should just like take what she can get. I think Nicole isn't as safe as she thinks because the game's changing all the time. Like, you as well should be as congenial as possible, just like being as positive as you can to every single relationship because you never know when they will help you. But I also think like, just in terms of like the interaction, something about it, like being all three of them against her, I do think it came across as like a little bit condescending, or at least just like, I don't know, a little bit harsh in that moment where like, you have the backup. You have the power. You are in control. We know that to be true. Like, the disparity was too great, so it felt like a little bit of punching down, which was just kind of like, I don't know, annoying to watch for me. But I would agree that, like, Teresa has no leg to stand on. I kind of feel like she would be a great Survivor podcaster right now. Like, she's podcasting from the island. Comes in the confessional, tells us exactly what's going on. Her awareness is on point. She's giving her 5 stars. Great job. She can't put any of it into practice. Like, I can put as much into practice right now in my social game with these people as she can, but she's absolutely giving us the analysis. So like, thank you as a podcaster to podcaster, Teresa. That's what we're currently doing right now.
Yeah, I'm intrigued, Marion, as to, like you said, you know, as fractured as Nuna or as Tuba might be, Nuna is certainly fractured as well. And despite the fact that Zamba 1.0 might be more unified, you still do have Teresa and Keon and Dino sort of like on the outs. Do you think that Teresa is going to be more of a target if they go to tribal council, or is she going to be more of a swing vote with the position that she's in?
I feel like she has the potential to be a great swing vote, but Teresa also didn't like fall on her mouth. She says what she says, and she says things without thinking. So she'll say what's on her mind, and that could potentially rub people the wrong way. But I can definitely see her outlasting someone like Nicole because she's more flexible and she's not, for example, in a trio already. So she's got more like swing, if that makes sense.
I think there are two ways that this could go. Either Rainier, and I would have to mostly credit him, keeps this group together, this Zamba group together somehow. Mostly maybe just like put the target on Tyson. They're all so wary of him that he just becomes the target, and or his allies become the target. They have to work around an idol that they're scared of, and it unites them. Or I think that contingent is screwed. I think like Nicole, like this could be a precursor to her going home. Like that conversation where she underestimates Teresa in the moment pretty much correctly, but I think that she could show, okay, sometimes people will help you in ways you don't understand. Because if I was like on the Inesu side and I walk into the challenge and I see that everyone from their old tribe is still in the game, okay, that's a lot of strength for them. So who are the outsiders I can pull in to go against this powerful contingent? Well, I sent Teresa to Immunity Island last time. I think she might be on the outs. Let's talk to her. Okay, who was out on the vote? Keon was out on the vote. You know, find these people. Dino, someone who so desperately needed to get immunity for himself. Clearly that had some ramifications. These are the conversations I'd be having. Like, yes, I'm watching it on TV. But if you can find those cracks and just pull over a couple of those people, absolutely someone like a Nicole, especially who's like weaker than Rainier or Mauritius, physically in the challenges, That could be like a death sentence for her, I feel.
Yeah, it is wild to me that despite it being a 6-3 swap on both sides, we just got so lucky from an entertainment perspective that essentially it's three groups of three. Like that is so great. Marion, what did you think about the early swap? We talked last week about how maybe it was necessary given the immunity island of it all. I know there was some chatter online about how they felt like it should have gone to three tribes of six instead of two tribes of nine. What do you think about swapping to those big two tribes?
To be honest, the swap in episode 3 gave my anxiety. Like I never saw that coming. I can understand from a point of, like you mentioned, immunity island, but I never saw it coming. And I kind of thought that they would split into three tribes. I do foresee another swap coming possibly before merge.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I think that this is just going to be a season that's going to be just fast and strategic. Like, you're thinking Survivor Cambodia, you're thinking the early swaps, you're thinking, yes, those are people who've played before, so let's put them in the firing line. These are super fans, these are gamers, we've been waiting a long time for this season, like, let's throw everything at them. And I do understand people were just kind of getting used to these tribes, not as into the early swaps. Like, I understand that criticism, but, and both groups were really fun, and I could have seen kind of how they would play out. But now we have, I think, two groups that are also very interesting. Like, I do hope that Nuna loses next week, because I think there's, like, a lot of different ways I could go with an idol involved as well. I mean, I'm not mad at the way it played out. I love the episode. I thought the way, like, Immunity Island really was just so fun. We can talk about that decision at length. We talk about these new groups. There's layers on layers. There's cross-tribal conversations. There's idol stuff. Like, I love the episode, so I'm excited about the way that's playing out, even if maybe you disagree with, like, an early swap, for example.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed the episode as well. And again, maybe it's because I'm dumb, but if the first episode was really obvious that Jason was going, and episode 2 was incredibly up in the air as to whether it was Mike or Pinty, I feel like this episode was sort of like a happy medium where they laid down the tracks pre-immunity challenge of, like, okay, this is the alliance that's going to turn against Mike. I actually think they did an okay job making a case. Like, I would not have been incredibly shocked if Anella went instead of Mike here, considering that Mike's sort of like last plea and all the stuff with Chappies. I think they did an okay job showing the other side of things. So they sort of found like a happy medium, but I really enjoyed it. I think we did get lucky with the way that the swap tribes lined up, but I do think had we also stayed in these configurations, it might have been pretty predictable. I mean, I feel like Zamba would have gotten rid of Keon. Vuna probably would have.
Yeah,
or Teresa if she wasn't sent to Immunity Island. And I feel like Vuna would have gotten rid of either Chappies or Santini if she had been sent to Immunity Island. And that just depends as to whether she grabs that tribal idol.
Yeah, I mean, let's keep it nimble. Let's see who can be super adaptable. And I do think that, like, for me at least, like, if you were a little bit confused about the new tribes, the structures did kind of become really clear to me, maybe in these three groups of three. You understood the vote, you understood the size. Like, there are complicated dynamics, but to me, it's been quite clearly laid out. So, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I'm loving the season. So, but I'm exactly the fan that it is appealing to. I do love the strategy. Cambodia is one of my favorite seasons ever. Like, give me the complexities, switch it up. I'll be writing things down, you know, like, split the votes. Like, let's see some numbers flying. Like, that is the fan I am. I understand not everyone's like that. But for me, like, I mean, I'm enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, I can totally understand that.
Yeah, and these guys definitely came to play, Shannon. Like, it's really nice to watch how especially the South African franchise has evolved. And, like, these guys really aren't scared of playing or saying things. Or it's just beautiful to watch.
Yeah, that is a good point as well, because I was saying, because I was talking about this, like, kind of the idea of, like, the gamey vibe of the season. And my brother was saying, like, the one thing we could possibly get, I mean, it's so hard, but, like, we doing the preseason interviews know that all of these people are not just gamers. Like, they all have an incredible story. And I just wish there was maybe time to, yes, we get all the gamey stuff, but, like, let's hear some of those stories. Like, let's put in some of those interviews maybe that we had.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they have that stuff, like, you know, in confessional. I think maybe that would give more of a personal element to it.
Yeah.
That maybe some people are missing. But for me, who feels like I spent time with them preseason, the whole package of it for me feels very comprehensive. But I don't know, for someone who's just watching the show, if that comes through as much. So that might be, like, the criticism of some of the editing to maybe make it a little bit more personal.
Well, yeah, I think Cambodia is a good comparison because I think as much as you might like the strategy, it isn't really like a personality filled season. Like you might say people like Abby Maria and Keith Nail had their moments, but they really didn't focus. Yeah, but they didn't focus a lot on that in the storytelling in favor of like describing all these dynamics. I'm getting something very similar here. So I do not begrudge anyone whatsoever if they're not really catching on so far, especially because I would also feel like, you know, maybe the biggest personality left is maybe someone like Sean or a Santini. And if they're not necessarily being highlighted for their antics, as opposed to something like Survivor South Africa Philippines, which was all full of wackadoo personalities, I can understand how maybe it's not your cup of tea. But to that point, like I'm really enjoying this cast. To your point, Marion, like, well, maybe their personalities aren't wackadoo. Their strategies are. So I'm just getting a big rise out of just like the fact that as soon as someone wakes up in the middle of the morning, like they're ready to wake up and choose violence and just completely turn the game upside down.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that I think helps the franchise now, and LaRue tweeted about it, that how you play the game is not necessarily who you are. And I feel like knowing that before you go on the island takes a lot of pressure off you in terms of like being so like in your head, like, okay, the camera's on me. I can't roll my eyes. I can't say this. Like, or that, like these guys just go for it because they know like how you play. It's not necessarily who you are at home. And that's what I love about the season.
You've crystallized something for me, Marion. Like, I think as well, the international audience should recognize what is being pulled here to where we need to go. We're comparing it to Survivor Cambodia, but we're not in the US. Like, you played Marion 7 years ago and were seen as villainous for playing the game to the rules, you know, like lie, cheat, steal, murder, right? Like that's what you should do in Survivor. Yeah. And like South Africa, I think as an audience needs to be dragged to where we're at in terms of hyper strategy, in terms of this being all okay, and not only okay, but good to play the game. Like everyone's playing the game. So if the repercussions of this are you feel like it's a bit too gamey, think about what we're gaining on the ground for this franchise, which is that 7 years ago you're getting hate for playing, and just 7 years on, it's all about let's play this, let's be kind and good and still have really kind voting confessionals, but yes, let's go at each other strategically. So I do think that what LaRue as a super fan is doing is just pushing that kind of super fan agenda. And like, yes, I totally see that some fans might think it's too much. A lot of us kind of want to go back to basics a little bit, and we don't like how fast it's becoming in the US, but I do think it's doing some good work, hopefully, in pushing the South African audience into understanding that this is a game because it is so gamified.
Yeah, the South African audience, or rather like 7 years ago when I played, they were very conservative. Shane actually joked on Thursday, he confessed that like Marion never told me to steal the idol. She told me to check, leave it, and you know, we'll put the vote on David, Jenna will go home. So, I mean, I got dragged for something I initially didn't do, but I also got dragged for the fact I feel that, you know, I was a female and I came to play hard, and I wasn't just going to step back and like ride the wave of my male ally. So I love that the South African audience, like the mentality of how they're watching the game is also like evolved with the players, and it's beautiful to watch.
Can I also ask, what were your thoughts? And Shannon mentioned this confessional before, but right at the beginning of the episode, right, when Paul comes back and says, oh, who was the ringleader? Was it you, Mike? And Carla talks about how, you know,
so
is it, you know, underestimating the blonde? Well, that's gonna, you know, joke's on you because that means I'm gonna outlast you. I'm sure to that point you just made, like, that's something you very much felt, right? Perceptions of when you have a male-female partnership on Survivor, the way the male is perceived versus the female.
Absolutely. Like, in general, I feel like the male, I don't know if it's correct in saying that they get the better edit, but people just feel like men are better players of Survivor for some reason, maybe because they are more male winners. But I really do feel like females are still underestimated in this game. And I think the one difference between myself and Carla would be like, I was okay that Shane was getting all the credit. Like I knew that like a lot of the things was my ideas, and the fact that he was getting the credit or the edit, I was okay with. Whereas I think Carla, like, she wants that credit. She wants to be all out there. And I really love the girl, but I just hope that she's able to like ring it in and be less emotional, because I really would like to see more of her.
But that paradox is why I love it so much. Because on one hand, as you say, like, yes, okay, fine. Let me do all the work and let him take all the bullets. Yeah, it was totally him. Vote him out instead of me. Great job. But then the other side of you was like, hey, I worked hard on that, Paul. Yeah. So, like, I think it is that dichotomy between, like, you know, it's the right move for you that, like, yeah, they're going to vote out my cause, you know, 40 minutes from now in screen time because maybe he seems more calculated and because all his strategy comes forward more than mine because of possibly some real things and then also the demographic stuff. And that's a good thing. But then also, like, it sucks not to get credit for your work. So I love that. And I feel it is something that we're catching up anyway as global audiences, but I think the South African audience is its own beast. And we have to show that confessional, I feel. Like, we have to make it really strategic. Like, we have to pull people along, I think, more than others realize for South Africa. And then we can revert back to, like, a comfortable little rhythm. But I think, like, let's go hard. The super fair direction, calling out, you know, how good it is to play the game, showing Carla, saying things like that, like just kind of being transparent about the way people are perceived and the way that the game has always been seen and trying to mold it to where we feel it fits, which is that playing the game is fine. Being a woman who plays the game, you know, you can have so much strength that goes unnoticed, like all of these things that we talk about and just giving voice to them. And I think the season is doing that.
It's beautiful to watch. And it's like, sometimes I forget that I was on the island at once upon a time ago, because it's just like I'm such when I watch the show, I forget, and I'm just like such a super fan. And it's like I don't know how else to put it, but it's incredibly beautiful to watch. It's the one thing is, like, I'm not really connecting with a lot of the cast, obviously, like you said, because we're just seeing a lot of gameplay and not really personality. And I think the one person I'm connecting with least would be Chappies.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, we get a lot of Chappies.
Yeah, I was saying, we get a lot of Chappies in from a personality perspective.
I feel, and this is just my opinion and perspective, I feel like Chappies is very, like, when he got the call to come into Survivor, he was, like, very in his head, like, let me never roll my eyes on camera. Let me never say what I want. I kind of feel like he's, like, someone that's doing a pageant. So, like, when the camera's on him, he's always, like, up straight and poised. And in a lot of ways, I'm actually just waiting for Chappies to come out and say that he came to Survivor to be brave. If you get what I'm saying. No shade, but, like, I'm waiting for that line because I just feel like he's so, like, calculated when the camera's on him as opposed to all the other contestants. And that's just something I'm picking up. I might be wrong, but...
Mm.
I can see both parts of that because I feel like Chappies has surprised me. Like, I see, like, the extremes of Chappies. We got a lot of that in the interview with him kind of running naked into the water. Like, there's the shtick.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, like, I do see a genuineness to it. And, like, I think he's done better than I expected. And he obviously makes relationships, like, beyond kind of, for me, all the bravado. Like, he just does seem like a regular guy who can play well and make relationships. So, like, I think I'm seeing that other layer to him myself.
It's tough because I think that you could be like, okay, are you playing things up for the cameras or do you have a big personality? And I kind of feel like for Chappies, it's both, you know, where he's like, he does have a big wild personality. That's why he got cast. But he'll also be like, yeah, I'll run naked into the water because I know that it'll make for, like, some fun, you know, WTF moments on the premiere episode.
But I don't feel like I ever criticize people for trying to be good TV. Like, I know that's something that went against me, like someone like Rick Devens, for example, is like, they're just trying too hard. Like, I always, like, I like when people try it. Like, yeah, you're on TV, you're entertaining me. Like, even if it's not landing for you, I like when people are trying to be big personalities, better than doing nothing. So that's something that I give a lot of grace to usually in terms of, like, the bravado, trying to be a big personality. Like, as long as you're being, like, a nice person, if you're playing it up for the cameras, I do feel your real personality will always shine through, and, like, maybe we'll get a funny moment in the meantime. All right, well, on that note, I think about, like, Survivor in general, we need to go back to the episode, get a little bit specific, and we're going to do that with the Chizzy. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
All right, need to do the Chizzy, but I need to make an announcement first. This was on Twitter. If you're not following me on Twitter, I mean, yeah, follow me because then you get the announcements before. But just a little plug there. But if you're not, if you don't have Twitter, here's what we're doing. We've been doing 2-1-1. Obviously, we've been voicing it as 3-2-1, but we've been, like, because the whole idea of the 2-1-1, even though it's not on the theme song or on the merch, buy the merch, by the way, another plug, is that last season, for the 2019 season, Mike and I would give 3-2-1. We had a guest most of the time, and we had to reduce it down to 2-1-1 to still be 12 points and fit in with our 3-2-1. But now we're thinking, like, there's no real point. We probably will have a guest, like, most, if not all of the time. If we don't have a guest, we'll probably put out, like, a fan vote. Again, follow me on Twitter for that to make it work. We want to go back to the 3-2-1 is what we're doing, Mike. And I feel good about this. What do you think about the change?
Listen, don't break what's already fixed. I don't know what the opposite of that phrase is, but yeah, I think this is a tried and true formula, Shaden. It is your calling card, I think, in the Survivor podcasting community of the many cards that you have in your deck. The 3-2-1 is all yours, and I think it makes sense no matter what the math might be if we just keep doing that week after week.
Yeah, so this actually changes things. Now, the great Randy Newport was making some beautiful charts that I will be sharing on Twitter every week again. Where are you if you're not following on the Twitter? But anyway, here are the current charts as they stand. So a couple of different things. Rhaenyra is still the winner week one. But now that the points change and we went to our 3-2-1s last week, Carla and Anesu didn't tie. Carla actually won. So after all of the bad stuff we've spoken about this week, maybe about Carla, actually like a delayed victory there for her as last week's Chili winner. Current charts, we've got Anesu who was winning on 9. Rhaenyra is on 8. Carla is on 7. Santini is on 4, Chappie's 3, Anella and Amy on 2, and Kieran on 1. So we're going to go to the 3-2-1 here. Marianne, who are your points for this week's Chizzy?
I'm going to give Santoni 3.
Mm-hmm.
And not because she's my favorite, not just because she's my favorite on the season, but because I think that this was really a great episode for her. The way that she just placed herself in the middle, and she has great relationships with everyone. So I'm going to give her 3. And then I'm going to give, I don't know. I'm tied between Dino and Kieran. I want to maybe say Kieran 2 just for winning his tribe that immunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did it. We didn't even talk about that. He did an awesome job in that challenge.
Yeah. So because he did an awesome job in the challenge, I'm going to give Kieran 2, and then I'm going to give Dino 1 for being aware of the fact that, like, Tyson and Paul were communicating. So just for his, like, awareness of the game and what was happening. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Santoni 3, Kieran 2, Dino 1.
Cool. I'll go next because Mike said he wanted some time to think about it for the podcast.
Yeah, I have no idea what I'm doing this week.
Well, you know, Mike, I'm prepared for the Chizzy. Like, are you not giving this, like, a
no, you said last week, like, oh, this is the first time I'm ever doing a live Chizzy point. Shannon, that's how I do all these. I come in feel out the conversation and then see how my thoughts change over the course of this.
I feel like that is so indicative of who we are as people. I'm like, guys, this is the first live Chizzy vote ever. I deviated from my notes. I can't even believe it. First and last time, I feel uncomfortable with this. Mike is like, I don't even have notes about the Chizzy. And I just do what I want every week.
Go with my gut, man. Your gut's always right.
I don't like, no. Okay, you're going to have to pre-send me your notes on the Chizzy each week. I need to know the note. I need to know you're locked in and that no one can possibly convince you, which is my podcasting MO. No, I'm going to give 3 points to Santini. She's great. Other than not having the idols in her pocket, great social game, pulling the wool over people's eyes. The fact that my cause goes to the day after video and doesn't even know that she did that. She is being underestimated and it is to everyone's detriment but hers. She gave, obviously, some information to Chappie, pulled him in that way, which I really like, but not all the information. So as well, she's like thinking about it from that perspective. Easy 3 points for me. 2 points I am giving to Chappie's. He won the vote. He did get that info as well from Santini. And then now he became the swing faction as well somehow, where it was all on him. And I think he made the right decision. So also a great game. As I said, Inessa and Carla last week, I gave 3 and 2. Very similar to how I was feeling about where they were placed in the structure for Santini and Chappie's, as Santini being the Inessa person and Chappie's being like Carla in that way. And then 1 point I will give to Anella because I have to credit someone and I have to, you know, take away those points from Amy that I wanted to give just because I really didn't agree with the decision. She trusted him to get it done. He did it. He was on the chopping block, could easily have been majorly swap screwed, and it would have been a true, true swap screw. He had his main ally leave for the day, left alone in that, still survived. Obviously helped out by how split Vuna was, but you have to give him some credit as well. I also really liked his point at the tribal council where he was like, you guys coming back together today felt like a reaction. And that did feel like quite real for Carla. So I thought that was a really good point and kind of putting the pressure on there about some pretty true dynamics that he saw. I will give an honorable mention to Rhaenyra, because the fact that it's United at all right now, I have to put on him because it absolutely shouldn't be. Sending Amy to Immunity Island, I think, made a lot of sense. Good awareness there in terms of, as well, of Tyson, of knowing exactly what he did. I think everyone did, but he is the one who voiced it in confessional. Yeah, it made sense to give Amy that power, and he got it done. So, yeah, I'm also giving 3 points to Santanu. And she's currently very much in the lead.
All right, I'll work my way up as I do 1, 2, 3. But the one I think is going to be the big point of contention. You know what? I'm gonna give a point to Amy, because here's the thing. Because I also, we talked about this in like the very first episode. I know I tend to give points based on like this direct episode, less so about like, oh, what's going to happen in the future. Much like I gave points to Inesu in episode one, despite the fact that they didn't go to tribal council and prove anything. I'm gonna give her a point here, because we haven't necessarily seen what's going to happen from that boneheaded Immunity Island decision yet. And I do feel like she should get at least a little bit of credit for what she was able to do pre-Immunity Challenge, but just a little bit. So she's going to get 1 point. Santini gets 2 points for me this week because of all the reasons that you two said, what she was able to do. And it still is alarming to me how she went from someone who was pretty much like dead to rights at the beginning of episode two to one of the most powerful positions in the tribe at the end of episode three. But my three is going to go to Chappies, mm-hmm. if only because like he gets all the benefits and all the stuff of what Santini was able to do. But he also gets sort of like extra credit due to the fact that he was pretty much next to go on Vuna. And the fact that he was able to work his way from a bottom position on his old tribe to probably the top position on his new tribe, I think really says something. Part of it was luck, but I do think he made the right decision. I think he also showed how he actually has a lot of surprising duplicity to his name. I think we all sort of reckon him as, again, a bit of a blowhard, a bit of like a Chris Noble type preseason. But him being able to straight up lie to Mike's face and still go through and voting him out, like that's a surprising set of skills from Chappies for me. I totally took him before as a type that would be like, well, you know, it's the honorable thing to tell someone that they're going. Like the fact that he was able to just basically cut Mike's throat right there gives me a lot of excitement for Chappies as a player. So he's going to get my three this week.
Yeah, I mean, Michaels was saying in the exit that, like, he knew it was desperate. He was just trying to kind of get everything he could to be closing, as he would say, even though, you know, that wouldn't necessarily help that much, just to, like, get a handshake out of people, but just trying to push it. And I love that Chappies was just like, yeah, sure, whatever. Shake your hand. I don't care. I'm voting you out in 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing is that, again, I think both Chappies and Paul especially, obviously there's nowhere to go but up when it comes to Paul. I think I would almost give him an honorable mention because I think he did show a surprising amount of adeptness. And despite everyone knowing it, like he was successful in giving the idol clue to Tyson, even telling him like twice to make sure that he understood it. But it does seem like both those guys are also showing a little bit of capacity to, you know, do their own shenanigans. You would think that maybe other types of people who get caught flat-footed and blindsided when one of their closest allies voted out would just be like dead fish. But these fish are swimming, baby. And so I think that Chappies, for me, is going to take the top spot here. But I think that Santini still wins the week out, right?
Yeah, well, she got 8. Sorry, I think I said the math wrong earlier. We are now doing 18 points each. This is why, see, the new system. She got 8 out of 18, which is pretty good. And we'll be giving out 18 points every week. And that's what's happening now. It used to be 12. Now it's 18. She got 8 points. So she's winning the Chizzy. Now she's at the top of the leaderboard on 12. And Nessu's on 9. Chappie's now up to 8. Rhaenyra is on 8. Carla's 7. And then we got Anella now on 3. Amy on 3. Kieran went up to 3. And Dino on 1. So those are the charts.
Who would have thought Dino would have get a Chizzy point in the first 3 weeks of this based on what happened in that first episode?
Well, I mean, he was just at a viewing party with one of our panelists. So I think maybe that was helpful.
I'm not being biased, though. Like, I really think that, like, him being aware of what was happening, like, deserves a little bit more than an honorable mention. So, like, 1 Chizzy point.
Yeah, did he buy you a dinner at the viewing party as well? Was that, you know, buy you a drink or something just to kind of sweeten the deal?
I also struggled on who to give Chizzy points to. So I've been struggling since my first watch of the episode, and I was actually just going to tweet, like, I was just going to make a tweet and be like, hey, season 8 contestants, I work on bribery and corruption.
We do. We always do. Mainly we like compliments.
Flattery will get you everywhere. So please, the next contestant who says how much they loved the tribe raid twist might get my Chizzy points next week.
I think Amy loved it, Mike. Like, yeah, she the points there. Look, we didn't confuse anyone with the math other than me. But this is what we're doing. Those are the points. And should we get to the next section where there is no math, but there is some bribery, maybe? The Biostrat Variety Hour. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now it's the Biostrat Variety Hour with your hosts, Shannon Goss.
I don't know what I was expecting.
And Mike Blue. Biostrat, it's delicious.
Oh, my God.
Why was it so thick?
One.
All right. Some exciting stuff happening in the episode. Obvious highlight of the episode. Future life was a reward in the episode. And I loved everything of this, Mike. We're excited about this, right?
Yeah, I mean, shout out to the person on Twitter who made, like, the meme about how Biostrath is, you know, dead to me. Future life is my new best friend. Like,
bye. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, future life is here now. It seems like they are much more resplendent of a reward than Biostrath ever did, right? They have, like, the bars, they have the protein powder. Also, considering, like, how much these people seem to be absolutely miserable on the Wild Coast, I think this was very much needed. So I am all in on Future Life. This looks legit as a sponsor and a reward as well.
Yeah, Marion, as our South African guest here, what can you tell us about Future Life other than the fact that it's clearly great?
Oh my word! Like I don't like the taste of Future Life. Okay.
Oh no! It's a terrible start to this whole thing. So bad, man. We're trying to keep sponsors.
Biostrath.
In my defense, I've never had the protein bars. I didn't even know that they had it, so I'm gonna go out and buy it and try it. I'm not gonna write them off. But their cereal's just like it's almost like a texture of like something you'd make a baby.
Not make a baby. You mean to make a baby eat?
Yeah, sorry. Let me say
okay. Okay.
Oh,
sorry.
That
was a different.
I was like, Marion.
I heard it and I knew Mike's mind would only be locked in there. So when I realized, I was like, no, Mike, let me let you know.
It's too late.
Get out of the gutter.
Oh, my word. I can feel myself blushing. But what I meant
to
mean,
podcast with Mike Blue, Marion.
The consistency of the cereal, it's something.
Okay, don't say consistency with what, no.
Oh, mm-hmm. My God.
You've lost us, Marion. Okay. It's like baby food.
Yes, there we go. It's like baby food. But I'm not going to knock the protein bars. I'm going to go out and try it.
Well, that's interesting because we did get a question from Tommy Guam saying, are you going to taste Future Life products? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, will that be funny? Or will it be us just eating protein bars on the podcast, which is not good podcasting? So, Marion, I mean, maybe if you could mail us the thing that you think is like baby making food,
absolutely,
we will eat it. We'll eat it on the podcast.
I will do just that. So I'll send you guys like the cereal and the protein bar, so you guys can have a feast.
Oh, all that's right. Interesting. Oh, wait a minute. I just realized if they got cereal, oh, Shannon, Marisha must have been so angry.
Yeah, she loves cereal. Look, this was a big reward. I love so much of this. Firstly, the fact that it was supplemented by an immunity advantage for the broad pun of, like, help your future life in the game, I thought was funny because I was like, now you're showing that this reward by itself isn't good enough and they also need to give an advantage. I think you've undercut yourself. Secondly, an after-game reward of, like, the future life kit or something that it was called, like, who cares about this? Who's going to show up to their home after getting voted out and be like, oh, yeah. Oh, my God. What a consolation. Yeah,
it's interesting. I feel like outside of the car rewards, we don't get typically rewards that are like, oh, and you get to enjoy this after the show.
Well, that's the thing is all we talk about, like, utilities outside the game, something like the car reward or, like, other prize money maybe or, like, other relationships or values. This Future Life kit, what a utility. Like, just all you need to do is win the challenge. Who cares about winning the game anymore? You've got this exceptional utility of some random Future Life thing for some reason that I haven't quite worked out yet. Was this not great?
Yeah. And I think this was the first thing, the first like sponsor outwardly mentioned on the show, right? Like we saw the lower thirds, but we haven't had like the outsurance reward yet. Obviously, I would imagine Mahindra is going to come in with some sort of a car reward later on in the season, but this is the first time we get, you know, Nico mentioning a sponsor on the show. It feels like ground has been broken here.
we're going to have the Mahindra car that's going to be after the game. We have this. I definitely want every sponsor to come in. I mean, definitely, like, you'll win a stay at the Wild Coast Sun after. I feel like that'd be really fun. Very amazing race for, like, winning the leg. You get some pies. They'll all be waiting for you in your hotel room if you win the challenge.
Yeah. No, Marion's all in on the, I've seen her tweet about the gas station pies.
I was really hoping that Fresh Stop would, like, be in this episode, because, like, eating a garage pie after a night out, or just, like, when you're really wiped out, it's like a rite of passage in South Africa.
Okay.
Everyone goes through it. So you go out at night, you get home at, like, 3 a.m. Not a lot is open, but there's a garage everywhere you go, you know? So you stop and you have a pie. And I just thought it would have been so amazing to see them eat, like, a garage pie.
So, wait, Mike, in the U.S., you call it gas station, right?
Petrol station.
You don't have a garage. Yeah, just one. Because I know in Australia as well, like, they don't say garage as well. So that's what we mean. These are gas station pies. But I will say, we'll get to the Branchula, because obviously we're in our first of many preseason podcasts for that competition. But Fresh Stop is winning. I love Fresh Stop. But more on Future Life. Mike, you're a Survivor historian. Was this the first ever branded food stealing?
As in, like, oh, this food is being offered?
No, the fact that Smash stole the protein bars and it was branded.
Do you count, like, Tyson with the coconuts, right? Like,
no, No, that's the whole point. Like, no, because they're coconuts and they're not branded.
I wouldn't say stealing, right? Like, if I don't think we've seen situations where it's like, hey, we're going to the Outback Steakhouse, but oh, made you look. Now I'm going to eat your steak. I don't think we see any food hoarding with the name brand specifically.
Exactly. And I love that, because, like, there's so much they should do with that in marketing. Like, Future Life, good enough to steal. It was great. It was such good advertising that this guy would, like, risk his safety in the game to steal these protein bars that Marion says might be terrible. I want to see how worth it was, but I absolutely love all of that. And I think that, like, as well, like, I thought it was a great character moment from Smash. He's shown to be a good player. It was, like, fun. Not a lot happened with it. No one worked out, like, that they randomly had 7 bars instead of 9. It was just, like, a funny, light moment. And I felt, like, amazing advertising for Future Life.
Future Life, steal your future.
See, Marion, you were ahead of the game, right? Like, imagine if it had existed during your season, and, like, when they take the idol, it's like, oh, you could steal an idol, you can steal your future with Future Life.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna go out and try the bars. I generally like protein bars, so I'm sure that it would be much better than the cereal.
I do think that if Anela is playing on Champions in 2014, and especially if he's a woman, the YouTube comments are like, horrible human stealing Future Life.
Oh my God.
He steals Future Life from these people. And then it's even better advertising, because it's like, anyone who would steal Future Life, like, how can you not let someone have that, like, God-given right? So it works with the internet, hey, too. It is great marketing.
Yeah. I actually, when I saw Anele do that, I was like, oh my God, if this was 2014, you'd be annihilated. But, like, also, it's so fantastic that the viewer has, like, evolved with the game.
Or the YouTube trolls, even in 2014, would be like, that's not that bad. Future Life is pretty meh. Like, we don't care what you did.
I love that he stole it.
Oh, it was great. I mean, I knew you'd love it, because that's, like, the villainous thing to do, right?
Yeah, but that's one of those rare, fun character scenes that we were talking about, right, in the edit. Where, like, I definitely thought, because they showed it, that, like, there was going to be a clue there. But I love the fact that it seems like right now, with the exception of, again, that really overpowered clue in Immunity Island, all these people are looking through all these things for clues that are just not there. I love that. It's just like how people, you know, joke how one day there should be a season of Survivor where, like, there are no idols, but everyone thinks there's an idol, so they're just going to drive themselves crazy looking for it. That's kind of the case we get here, right? Where they're like, oh, there's obviously an idol clue in this. Let me rip apart the tarp, and there isn't whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, you say nothing happened with it. I'm thinking, like, possibly, like, Chekhov's rappers, in that, like, we saw him dispose of that. Like, imagine if someone's fine. I don't know. It's probably fine. It probably just was a fun thing. But, look, it was a risk. I don't think he realized that each been given one, like, 9 bars, and then had to be like, oh, 7 bars for 9 of us. So let's put 7 bars into one, like, we'll each get 1/9 of 7 bars. Like, that's okay math to do out on this island. Like, it just made no sense, and he had to roll with it. Absolutely. Like, not even just because it was the sponsor. I really, truly love that moment so much. Also, I will say that Smash is angling to be the face of something. Very Rob Bentley about it, not coming on like Marion and saying it's bad, because he said, you know, you need that extra at Future Life VA, the account, to kickstart your mornings if you're planning to always be closing during the day. Love this, because he stole Mike's line. Doesn't, like, no front end on that.
That's insult added to injury. Like, not only am I going to take your line, I'm using the sponsor to do so.
Yeah, I'm going to be the face of Future Life, and I'm going to win Survivor, and I just voted you out, and that's all in a day's work for Smash. So I'll let you know if he becomes the face of Future Life. I feel like that's a developing story. Because they retweeted him, so he's doing that. All right, more from the sponsors. Mike, last week we found out what would happen if I got voted out on Survivor. How would the sponsors roast me? They would say, Shan on the island, more like Shan off. Okay.
Yes.
We now, this week, found out what would happen to you. Mike Claus went home. A lot of Mike drop puns from the Survivor South Africa account, from Mahindra. So if you ever go on Survivor South Africa, that's how you'll get roasted, and I want you to know that.
I drop the mic, Mike turns off. All that type of stuff. Yeah, I think it makes sense. Should I go by Michael instead? Would that make things just harder for the sponsors? That's the only way why I go by my, like, formal name.
You have to. And when they ask you why you're going by Michael, you have to say so that you can't get roasted by Mahindra. I love that.
Exactly. But then they'll take my last name, right? They'll be like, looks like the bloom's off the rose. And then I'm just, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, it looks like you were bloomed.
Or, like, if you went as Michael, they could go, like, just beat it.
Yeah, like, that's true. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he was real bad at the game.
Yeah.
I do think that, yeah, the lesson is they will find a way to roast you. Just take your medicine. Just take the bias draft. No point trying to work around it because it's inevitable.
I'm surprised. So were there more Mike puns or more lawyer puns in response to Mike Claus going?
I feel like I did see, like, a couple of, like, lawyer things, I think, from earlier in the episode. But the main thing I was seeing were Mike drop gifts and puns about that. So I think that, I don't know every tweet that was tweeted on the show, but it does seem it was, like, a very mic drop direction. So, you know, makes sense. His name is Mike. No, very few cat things as well. Like, ran out of lives would have been where I went.
This shows that they're not, shame on you, sponsors, for not listening to our dozens of hours of preseason coverage to know that we have already declared Mike Claus a cat.
Yeah, but when you pull out of the show next year, next year you're going to know that Marion said that your product was bad, but you're not listening to the Mike Claus.
I didn't say it's bad. I'm just not a fan of cereal in general. Okay. Let me rather say that.
Okay, you're not even the first person in the last 3 weeks to say I didn't say it was bad in relation to the running theme. Okay. Let's move on to my fave current leader in the branch, Fresh Stop. As we said, gas station pies. So they tweeted, need an ally? We've got your back at Fresh Stop, with an image of Chappies, Paul, and Mike. Love that.
Wait, but that's very mixed messaging.
Yeah.
Does it mean to say, like, we're like Chappies and Paul? Or is it to say, like, hey, Mike, you might not have Chappies and Paul, but you'll always have Fresh Stop?
No, I think it was like, this is an alliance of people shaking hands. We could be in alliance with you. It's like, but that's not a good alliance. Not those two. Not that group.
Yeah, don't pick them.
Yeah. Okay. They also said, they tweeted this, blankets are actually a cool reward, come to think of it. I just love that. Come to think of what? Like, obviously they are. Like, why are we, what are we debating here? Another thing I love about them, their bio on Twitter is above average convenience store.
That's great.
Modesty will get you everywhere, right? No, not everyone's gonna be Chappy. Some people are gonna be like, yeah, we're above average. Like, we're not gonna say we're gourmet, but, you know, if you've had a long night, as Marion says, you might come to us and have a good time.
Yeah, they're so earnest. Like, I mean, I do think that Future Life may be listening, because they put in their marketing this week as seen on Survivor SA. And last week I said how much I love Fresh Stop saying as seen on TV because I thought it was adorable. So maybe people are listening. We also got, so thank you to Josh Small again for giving us all of the corner ads just so I don't have to be worried that I'm missing them as I watch the episode. My favorite one was Fresh Stop. They said, need a boost? Power up at Fresh Stop. In the corner, and, like, Carla was struggling and needed a boost. So that's, like, good integration from a marketing perspective. Okay, that's all I have from the sponsors, but I do want to go back to a storyline from last week.
Yes.
Which is the out-of-context account listening? So I think pretty clearly not, because they didn't say any of the ridiculous things that Mike said last week, which would be, I think, a given, but they are trying to pretend that they're listening, like when I was in high school and I wouldn't read the book, but I'd still do a test on it because I'd watch the movie. They retweeted Marion, who quoted Mike's ridiculous things. I see you. And they quoted Rob, but from the 1 minute social media clip on Twitter. So again, I appreciate you trying to include us, but you're pretty clearly not listening to the podcast.
Wow.
And I just want to point out that I'm onto you. And why won't you give Survivor South Africa a shot?
So you are essentially like the Nicole to the out of context accounts Teresa right now, right? Of like, what are you giving me? You're not, you need something from me, if anything. Was there nothing from our friends at Technoblock this week, Shannon?
Good questions. You guys talk among yourself because I might have forgotten to check Technic. There's so many, Mike. There's so many.
The one thing I will bring up is, so last week we had a real tough time trying to figure out, like, obviously Stay and Spray works perfectly for Immunity Island Technoblock crossover. But what do you do when you give up and the heavens shine from above? Down comes Rainier himself.
And a lot of other people. I will say we got this three times.
Yes, but I will highlight specifically the player himself who not only listens to our nonsense, but answered the question for us. Give up and glow is obviously the response. Not give up and gobble, as an idiot said last week. So thank you to Rainier and the countless others who had us come up with give up and glow as the solution.
Okay, but okay, I will say Technoblock doesn't tweet the episode. That's what it was. But also, give up and glow, so you stay and spray, but if you don't spray, you're going to glow. I feel like that's not good marketing, because that's showing if you don't use our product, you're going to glow. Like, no, give up and burn and die of skin cancer.
Yeah, this is actually the one sponsor. Like, I'm also going to go buy the products just because I use sunblock every single day because of my skin condition. Even in winter, I have to put on sunblock. So, I mean, I feel like I could be a poster child for them. Mm-hmm. But okay. I'm definitely going to go out and try the product as well.
Good to put your name out there. Like, if we can get some guest to be the face of these products, we'll really have done something.
All right.
Marion, weigh in. What brand should I stand when we eventually get down to this, start eliminating brands? Is it Technoblock?
I mean, we'll see if they'll send me some free products to try out. Then we'll stand them. I'm only joking. Honestly, I think I'm also a Fresh Top's my favorite.
Okay. They're really in the lead right now.
Yeah, I mean, they are above average, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Above average convenience. That's so adorable. Unless it's a joke I don't understand. I love them.
I stand Fresh Top.
Okay, let's get to some questions. Rahul Jog asks, is Chappie allowed to kick Kala or Warda onto Vuna with his diplomatic immunity, and should he, if so? You know.
Yeah, so this is interesting. I think this is another reason why I may have given Chappie's the 3 points this week as well, is because he does get to keep his diplomatic immunity. So, Marion, what do you think about the diplomatic immunity twist? And do you think Chappies is going to use it at all in this iteration on Tuba?
I think it's a great new addition to the South African Survivor franchise. I'm generally not a big fan of, like, all these, not rewards, what do you, like, advantages in the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very, like, old school at heart. Like, just put one immunity idol in the game and let the contestants battle it out. But I do feel like this is so, I love it. Like, when I found out about it, I loved it. I don't know if I could see Chappies using it on anyone else but himself, to be honest. But I'm excited to see what he does with it. And then I hope he gets to use it, unlike Jason did.
Well, he can't technically kick out Kala or Warda, but I wouldn't be doing that because then not a lot of threat to you and they're great fodder. Like, then you're
that's
doing the that, they're going to get rid of someone else. Like, that's
That's why I think I sort of implied that I do not imagine him using it in this instance whatsoever, because why would you kick out who looks to be right now guaranteed to go next over you to send them over to be the minority on the, because I have another thing too, like if you feel like Santini or yourself or Paul are in danger, now you're sending yourself off to the minority on the other tribe too. So like it feels like with the way the tribe shook down and the way this vote shook out, there's no particular reason for him to use it right now. To Marion's earlier point, if there is a second swap, maybe he'll use it then, but I do not think we're seeing this thing for quite a few episodes. Yeah.
I would agree. John Johnson asks, is this reward challenge a better format where you're trying to win one item per round?
Yeah, let's talk about this, because this is something I know we see a few times in Australian Survivor, but yeah, it's been a hot second since we've seen like the, okay, you're going to do one-on-one battles and like everyone wins something. I do think part of it was again, because of the tribe raid, but I don't know. I kind of loved it. I like the fact that it does put like weight on each individual matchup. Maybe just from like an emotional well-being perspective, I am happy that each tribe does walk away with something rather than like one tribe getting nothing. I don't know. Marion, as a former contestant, do you think they were getting it too cushy here with everyone walking home with some cushions?
I think so. I think they've been spoiled this season. I definitely think they're being a little bit spoiled this season, but you know, when you lose a reward challenge, it's very defeating. So maybe in like keeping the morale up in like that perspective, so that people are just like on top form for when immunity challenge comes, from a perspective like that, great. But like, I'm more like an all or nothing type of person, I guess.
I mean, they did it a bit in Champions with like the fruit reward, for example. I do think there is something about the totality of losing that can be so demoralizing. That's quite good TV when a tribe just like loses a couple of challenges in a row and a big reward, and it's just like so demoralized that that's interesting to watch rather than everyone kind of being mostly happy. But I do think that this is like, at least in the modern game, quite taken from like an Australian Survivor, for example, to put like one person in like that champion position to win like something that they can kind of give ownership to. I mean, I wouldn't do it as every reward, but I think it's interesting to switch it up.
Can we talk about the Chappie's injury though for a second?
Yeah, what was that? Was that like Chekhov's injury?
That's what I'm worried about. I'm very confused. I thought maybe we might get like a Chappie's medevac this episode. Oh, yeah. I'm really confused as to why we got this whole story about him cutting his hand.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, I assumed it was like going to be because he then lost the challenge, but he didn't. So I am confused. I hope it doesn't become like a larger thing, because no one wants to see that. Well, let's see. Chekhov's injury. Keep an eye on that. Nick Fishman asks, is it a hot take to hope for the future that we have more 6-3 splits after a swap than 5-4 splits?
That's a really interesting question.
Well, I mean, this is something I think I can speak to, because I feel like I talk about it all the time on the Alliance Management podcast I just did with Taryn. I feel like we spoke about it, maybe not from a swap perspective, but just in terms of, I often feel that when you're a smaller minority, like a 3 against a big 6, you actually have more room to move. You're seen as less of a threat, and people might maybe want to work with you more, or like feel a little comfortable, will take out their own. Whereas like if you come in pretty much even or close to even, you'll be like the other big bad wolf. They'll stay united against you, vote you out, and maybe a pogonging will ensue. So I do think that we will see this year. I do think that people will be comfortable enough to kind of form newer factions, and there's enough kind of the sixes are big enough that they can kind of split up or take people off it and form new groups rather than having to be these like locked in groups of 5 or 4. So I do think it is an interesting structure that we've seen, and I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah, I don't know though, because then part of me is also saying, as I mentioned before, did we get lucky with this particular cast and this particular group? Because I could see a situation where it's very easy to stick together 6 strong, as opposed to, I don't know though, because then maybe with a 5-4, it becomes more like tribal, for lack of a better term, right? Of like, okay, it's this 4 and this 4, yeah, and then one person's in the middle. Yeah, there's more room to maneuver. I'm not sure. I'm gonna have to like give the cop out answer and say I think it really depends on the cast and who is part of that tribe.
I think post merge historically, it is good to be in that small like 3, like for example in token teams, like that can really help out. But I think the swap element makes it interesting, because you would think that like if a large tribe has an advantage, the time they're really going to take that is post-swap, to really set themselves up for the merge, and really just like take out some numbers and really get some good structures going into the merge. So I do think this is probably a combination of those structures are interesting and this cast is interesting, and that goes against any kind of inclination you might have post-swap to just go down in the numbers and really set yourself up from a numbers perspective in the merge. Okay, last question is for you, Marion. Jeremy Hamilton, I don't know how we spent the whole podcast without mentioning this. He asked you, how does Tyson's crotch idol compare to Shane's crotch idol? I don't know if I can ask you that, but it was Jeremy's question.
I think the difference is that Shane's crutch idol was everyone's crutch idol at a point. It's like it was in David's crutch before it was there, was in my crutch at some time. Like it floated and then it
universal
was
a universal crutch idol.
It was the universal crutch idol. So we'll see what Tyson does with his. It's just didn't you just think it was so funny when he was so scared that it was visible and he's like, it's so big. And then Anesu goes, yeah, you can't see anything. And I was like, oh my God.
Loved it. So there was such little Anesu content, surprisingly, compared to last week. But like that moment made the episode for me. Especially like compare it to Marisha, right? Saying in Afrikaans, like, oh no, Sean, we weren't looking there. Like, we don't want to look there. And Anesu like takes a look at Tyson's package.
Yeah.
So, like, you really notice a difference night and day. I love it.
It was hilarious.
Great moment. Well, on that note, on the crotch note, obviously that's where we had to end it. That's all that I have. Marion, thank you so much for coming on and, you know, getting more Survivor South Africa Champions content. We couldn't get enough of it. We've extended it into this season. Where can everyone find you and follow you for your Survivor takes? They will be retweeted by the Out of Context account, trying to pretend that they're listening, but otherwise, where can people actually follow you?
They can follow me on Instagram. My handle's Marion_DeVos, MARIAN_DEVOS, or on Twitter at MarionDeVos3.
And Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world?
Lots of stuff. I, of course, am always covering Lost and the X-Files over on Post Show Recaps. Also did a really fun podcast with Josh Wigler and Puya Zanvakili for the patrons of Post Show Recaps, but also on Puya's Twitch channel, where we did our own tier list of fictional universes to live in. What are some of the best universes to live and what are some of the worst? We got into it all. I also did a Survivor based tier list this past week with Rob Cesarino and Scott Chernoff, where we talked about some of Survivor's best and worst catchphrases. I'm not sure where give up and gobble or spray and stay or give up and glow would land, but yeah, we talked through some of the phrases over the years of Survivor that have either transcended the show or just become recurring throughout the fan base. So check all that out. And of course, plenty more to come in the coming weeks.
Yeah. So follow us at @MikeBloomType, at Shannon Gates, again, for the chili charts, the amazing chili charts every week, for the question thread. So much going on. Don't miss any of it. Subscribe as well to the International Survivor Hapubs feed so that you get all of this. And Mike, you just mentioned our next guest. We will have the great Josh Wigler on next week. Very rare to get Josh Wigler talking about Survivor these days, so it is an exclusive opportunity. I hope everyone will check that out for week four, see how Mike's devilish plans come into effect. And
I just realized we're covering week 40, so it makes sense to have Josh Wigler on.
Perfect. Back to Survivor for Josh. We do have X interviews now. We're going to have Pinty and then Mike Claus, which I really love. Very different interviews, but great to hear from the cast. But thank you guys so much. Another really fun chat about this season, and I'm just having a great time with all of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
We loved it.
Yeah, such our pleasure. Time.
Yeah, we said baby making consistency. So,
my God.
So we're having fun. It's been good. Thank you guys so much. Thank you to Scott Sapier behind the scenes. Thank you to everyone for listening. And now I will throw it to Pinty's exit interview.
All right, everybody. Looks like we have Pinty on the line. Pinty, are you there?
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Good, good. So happy to talk with you after a very eventful week, I would say, on the Wild Coast for you. I guess the first thing I want to ask is, obviously, a lot of big stuff happened in these first couple of episodes. What was it like from your perspective to watch it all back? Especially, I think, once you see everything that happened that maybe you were not completely aware of by the time you left.
I mean, it was definitely exciting and just like an eye opener, really. Just to see, you know, all the conversations that took place that I wasn't aware of, and all these interactions that I wasn't aware of. So yeah, I mean, a bunch of mixed emotions, and also just entertained. I think would be the right sort of description to use.
So we'll start where things ended, because I gotta start with talking about your final words. Obviously, you know, you had some strong emotions, you felt blindsided, and you felt that Chappies and Paul were the engineers of your demise, as it were. I know you talked in a secret scene online about how you had picked up something that Chappies had said at Tribal Council that made you believe that he was the one behind it. But can you talk to me a little bit more about what made you feel in that moment that these two guys, you know, former members of Formidable, were the ones that you felt had been the ones that led to you being booted?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been a while back, so I can't really remember exactly what I said behind the scenes. But, you know, one of the main reasons why I felt like at the time that they were kind of the ones that were, you know, involved with the Blind Side was because I had already started to feel within the tribe sort of an uneasy and untrustworthy feeling towards them too, as two counterparts. So, yeah, I mean, that's where that came from. I can't really remember what I said off camera at the way back when. So, yeah, speaking about now, and what I can remember clearly is that, like, I felt that there was a bit of an uneasy sort of scheming going on that they were kind of getting up to. And I think that was sort of maybe sort of my main reason for thinking that they were involved with that.
And so what about Tyson and Inesu? Because I think what you were thinking about them is what the two of them were doing. But it seemed like you felt really confident in your relationships with them, that you knew they had stuck by your side. Was it anything from, you know, the reactions they were giving you at Tribal Council that made you believe that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like, you know, one of the main things for me, and I think for most people, is that when you go to a Tribal Council, you can't be ignorant to think that you're not going home that night. So, you know, I wasn't really like hearing, you know, what they were saying, and I didn't feel like anything was kind of directed towards me. I think it was more kind of just answering Niku and speaking about the game as a whole for themselves and regarding them. So, yeah, I mean, you know, like my alliance with Inesu was one that I really kind of banked my money on. And, you know, just like at the end, you know, she was crying and stuff like that. That kind of, you know, gave me a little bit more validation, which was untrue. And I was off the mark, but it kind of validated my belief that she didn't know about the Blind Side and all these kinds of things, which I think is fair to say. That assumption was maybe the right assumption to have. You know, with regards to Tyson, you know, he was like, you know, in a moment in which we were still at the camp, and I started to feel this sort of uncertainty towards Chappies and Paul. You know, I approached Tyson, or Tyson and I had already had a discussion where Kieran was involved about alliances and so on. And, you know, I thought Tyson moving forward would be my branch out. That would be sort of like, okay, I can't really rely on this alliance, this only alliance that I've got. So I need to start spreading my wings a bit. I hope that answers your question.
No, definitely. And that's an interesting point, because we see that you end up telling Tyson about Chappie's diplomatic immunity, which I think we all had a little bit of a question about. Was that to your point that you felt like maybe Formidable isn't working out? Let me try to start something with Tyson here by telling him this information.
You know, it was more sort of a backup plan. I mean, at the end of it, you know, I don't know if you recall, there's a scene in which myself, Tyson, and Kieran are kind of talking about alliances and so on and so forth. And basically, you know, we had this discussion, and I sort of knew that Kieran and Inesu were kind of having discussions and stuff like that. So I really didn't know where Tyson was at with the rest of the tribe and the rest of the other castaways. I did know that he had his hands somewhere else and so on and so forth. And telling him that information, it was kind of like, okay, I need to maybe start rethinking how my game plan, like, am I going to go for this honest, loyal, stick to one alliance throughout the game? Because I don't think it's going to do me any good. So speaking to him and so on, and just kind of like, you know, again, because if you watch the episodes, I'm not going out there and talking to this one, talking to that one, like spinning stories, you know, like I'm carefully like giving myself to Inesu and to Chappies, and then Paul kind of gets integrated, and then I'm a little bit weary of him being brought into the alliance, but then I'm like, okay, cool, that's fine. And then talking to Tyson and Kieran on the beach and like all this, so there are backstories, which, you know, that, you know, that are within those days that the viewers don't see. So yeah, I mean, that was what it was. I was just really just trying to kind of come up with a plan B, really.
So to that point, there was some commentary from your other tribe members about how they felt maybe you were a little bit too dominant around camp. You know, a lot of people were saying, I can't really play with Pinty. I know Warda said in her voting confessional, you don't respect anyone at camp. What's your reaction when you see that? Were you surprised to find out that so many people thought that about you while playing in the game?
You know, Mike, you know, like, that's sort of all sensitive Susie commentary, to be honest with you. Like I said a few moments ago, you know, there was, you know, moments in which weren't really like viewed to the viewers. And I think a lot of the episode didn't really show kind of like the nice side of my time there. You know, like, all the sort of like instances in which was shown and like the end of it all, it just kind of, I mean, you know, there are backstories to all of that. And there are scenes in which, you know, weren't shown that were like real scenes and scenes that didn't really, that I felt like that was not what, that wasn't the perception I was being viewed in. So I'm a straightforward person. You know, I say things the way they are. And the whole shoe thing with Carla, you know, there's also a backstory around that where a couple of shoes had burnt already, two pairs of shoes had burnt already before that, and a couple of socks. So it was a moment of frustration in which I was just trying to help her and just trying to be like, hey, do you want your shoes to burn? Sure, the tone in which I said it might have seemed a bit abrasive or a bit, I don't know, bossy or whatever it is, but it was not my intention to be or to come across like that.
Well, let's talk about Carla, because she has these confessionals, right, saying, I gave Pinty a little bit of time. She and I don't get along. Did you feel the same way about her back?
Not at all.
Yeah?
Yeah, I got taken by surprise there. I mean, I didn't realize that it was that deep with her. Otherwise, I would have, you know, tried to kind of patch things up a little bit, you know, and... after watching the episode, you know, for me, the only explanation is that she was really trying to protect Mike, and because it was a target on Mike's back, and that target was set. And, you know, like, and obviously with me putting my foot into it and going around and like telling people about their shoes burning and about going to Kirana and being like, hey, man, like, you know, you're pretty much lying to me right now, and I can tell that you are, and all these kinds of things definitely didn't play in my favor. And she saw that, and she capitalized on that. And I don't necessarily think that, you know, I think that the fact that Mike was about to go home, that's where that kind of like ignited that thing of like, okay, my guy's going home, like it can't happen. And I played right into it. So, yeah.
Let's talk about that, because you make mention to this a few times, that Mike played too hard, too fast, that you had turned the target apparently from Warda to Mike when it came to tribal council. We didn't necessarily see what put Mike in the firing line so early. Can you explain a bit as to why Mike had so many eyes on him, including from yourself early on?
Well, I mean, from my point of view, or from my sort of strategic point of view, is that, you know, Mike, for me, I knew that I didn't know who else was in an alliance. I was in an alliance with Anesu, Chappies, and later on Paul. And I knew that Mike, Carla, and Kieran were in an alliance. I was not sure who else was in an alliance with them, but those were like three confirmed names for me. And I felt that Mike was the puppet master in all of that. And all I wanted to, you know, it was just to like kind of, really get rid of the puppet master, and from there on out, you know, try and monopolize the game into our favor. So that was where, from a strategic point of view, that was where I was coming from. It wasn't necessarily anything to do with Mike and his gameplay or anything like that. I just felt like there would come a time where they would do the same thing, maybe vote myself out or Chappies out or Paul out or whatever, and that would weaken our alliance. And I wasn't clear on who was in Mike's alliance at the time. So, yeah, that was where I was coming from with that move.
Mm. Speaking of Paul, I know that it comes to a certain point, right, where you say, all right, he's not around. I don't know if we should make this formidable. Let's keep it at three-mittable. Of course, he ends up voting for Warda at Tribal Council. What was your perception of Paul? Was he really that rogue agent that you sort of built him up to be during one of the scenes in the past episode?
Well, I mean, during the time when I was there, I can't speak for anything after my time away from the island, but during the time that I was there, I was also very unsure of where Paul is. And that was kind of where my sort of uncertainty came from. I was like, okay, I'm not sure. Like, I haven't really spoken to this guy. He's like coming in here with Chappies. I really trust Chappies. I really trust Inesu. I just have to like put my trust in them because they wouldn't do anything to affect this alliance. Like, you know, that was kind of my idea of that whole thing. So, I mean, yeah, for me, he seemed like a rogue agent simply because I didn't know what he was up to. I don't know where he was or what he was doing or who he was talking to or if he even meant, if it was real for him to join our alliance. And I think that's what brought in sort of the sort of uncertainty from my side regarding him and our alliance.
I want to go back to that conversation that you have with Kieran and Inesu, where he says, I'm voting off Mike, and you, I mean, it was truthfully so, but you do call him out to his face saying, I think you're lying. And then, you know, hey, can you give Inesu and I some time to talk on our own? How do you look back on that conversation? What was sort of your reasoning behind confronting him right there?
Yeah, I mean, it was at that point, you know, I haven't had much sleep. I'm exhausted. I'm wet. I'm just like trying to understand what's going on. And like, I see them talking there and I'm like, yeah, but we're in an alliance together. What are they talking about? Usually like it would be, you know, like why are we not on the same page? And also bearing in mind that I know Kieran is in this alliance with Mike. Is he going to blindside Mike? What is happening? And, you know, I'd had, you know, again, just to elaborate on that, I'd had discussions with Kieran before about his alliance with Mike and where he stood with that and where he was with that. And, you know, approaching him in that way was kind of just like, I could have been more delicate. I could have been a little bit more sort of thoughtful around it. But at that point, I was exhausted and I was just like, okay, what are we voting for? And like, I just needed to call bullshit at that moment. So, and also, you know, one of the things that I'm quite good at is reading body language, reading the eyes. And I knew from that moment on, he lied to me, which is why I was like, can I have a moment with Inesu? Because I knew that, okay, this guy I'm calling his bluff. And I need to know what is going on. So yeah.
The first confessional we see of you, in episode one, you say, I want to play an honest game because honesty is the best policy. I know afterwards you had said your downfall was not really seeing people as deceitful. In retrospect, looking back, do you think you can truly play an honest game in the game of Survivor? How much do you think you were able to succeed at your initial goal based on everything that happened on the island?
You know, Mike, us as humans are forever in iteration, hey? Like me wanting to play an honest game is a reflection of who I am in real life. And going on Survivor and wanting to keep some kind of, you know, part of me that is true in the game was what I was aiming for. So I don't, at this stage, after I've tried and had not succeeded, I don't think that it is possible to play an honest game in Survivor, 100% honest game in Survivor and make it to the end. I definitely don't think so. I don't have any regrets about playing that way. I don't feel like, oh, you know, I should have never done this way because I don't know how else to be. And that's me in real life. I don't know how else to be than just straightforward, saying it like it is and just getting it done. Like that's it kind of thing. So yeah, it's a very important sort of trait of mine, and when I said that honesty is the best policy, it may have not even meant in the game, because again, I've never played Survivor before. I didn't know what to expect. you know, going in there, and I've watched the show many a times, and I've kind of seen the backstabbing and the deceit and stuff like that. But until you're there and until you're playing the game, like, you, all you've got is just information. And it's like, it's information that's, you know, kind of storylined to, for the viewers. So, yeah, like, I definitely don't think that it's a trait that could get you to the end. Playing the honesty is the best policy game. But I definitely do think that if you were to find an alliance, like I thought I had with Chappies and Inesu, that would kind of treasure or kind of respect or like appreciate, you know, sharing an honest game as the core. We are the core. You can have alliances anywhere else. And the core stay true to each other. I think that that is possible.
Mm. Well, if I may be honest, I was so entertained by watching you over the course of these two episodes. Obviously, for your sake, I wish it worked out better, but it was so much fun to watch you and everyone around you work over the course of this really chaotic game. So thank you for everything that you brought to this season. You know, as a fandom, we greatly appreciate all things Pinty coming from Survivor South Africa season 8.
Yeah, I appreciate you too, Mike. And same goes for Shannon as well. Thanks so much. And yeah, it was great to chat to you and catch up.
All right. Well, let us welcome a guy who once upon a time we called a cannibal cat lawyer. And I cannot believe he was able to have the maturity to talk to us after that. But regardless, we are here today. Mike Laws, approach the bench. How you doing, man?
Hey, Mike. How's it going, man?
I'm doing well. You know, look, I always love talking to a fellow Mike, which it was further on in the game, though I'm sure I am, you know, preaching into the choir here. But yeah, we've got a big swap, a big couple of episodes for you to talk about today.
I mean, it was pretty filled. Like, I was thinking in the beginning it would be kind of like, you know, Club Med, hit the beach and relax a little. My God, it was intense.
Well, let's start. I keep saying this with your cast, but you are a blindside thirsty cast. So I want to start with where things finish, because you get this promise from Chappies at Tribal Council of, yeah, Vuna strong, let's stick together. And then your name winds up not only on the parchment, but with the majority of votes attached to it. How surprised were you by that final result, given, you know, the promises that people like Chappies and Paul had made to you?
So I wasn't surprised that I got voted out, and it kind of happened exactly how I thought it. What I said straight after the tribe swap, I said, you know, if I don't get these guys from Vuna strong, I think I'm going to go. You know, that came true. And that was always in the back of my mind. And to be honest, I think that in my head, I thought the odds of me pulling it off successfully were so low. And so even when they, you know, made those promises to me about staying Vuna strong, still in the back of my head, I was like pretty unconvinced. I was like, God, this is going to be a real 50-50, 60-40, and it's going to be me or Smash. Like, one of us is definitely going home. And I think even the last little word I said just before we walk off to tribal, and I'm like, oh, I'm leaving my hands in the, you know, my life in the hands of two people who I don't think really want to play with me. I mean, something along those lines. I think that speaks to just how aware I was that it was pretty on shaky soil. What I did not anticipate was Santoni flipping. Mm. So the going home and being voted out, I anticipated, but the how that I wasn't so sure about. So it's interesting if it, you know, I'm not sure if it counts. I guess I'd be conflicted. I have a conflict of interest in asking whether or not I was really blindsided, since I was kind of thought it was going to be me or Smash. And there's this one moment in that tribal council where when I was rewatching it, there's this look on my face. It's not like an eye roll, but I think I do like a little, not like a grimace, but like I do a little frown and eye something. And I'm like, that was the moment in that tribal where I was like, oh no, these guys are 100% voting for me. It's going down. And in my last desperate move, I thought, at least to make Chappies feel guilty, I'm going to like try and extract one last commitment from him. But by that moment, I knew I was flambé.
Right. So talking again about the dynamics on that Zomba tribe, I mean, talk to me about those efforts to try to remain Voona strong. Of course, we've got to get into the whole like body corporate always be closing group meeting. Was that like out of desperation? Did you have that in your pocket the entire time coming into this game? But what was the strategy behind that group meeting?
So this was my, I mean, so, you know, a lot of people said, oh no, that's like a really, was like a really cringe move. And when I knew at the time I was doing it, it was like the cringiest thing. But at that stage, I was convinced, and now I know rightfully so, that Chappies and Paul had flipped to you know, the old Zumba. You could see it. I mean, you could see it in the conversations they were having with the other team and the kind of warmth. You could see it in close and you could see it from afar. I could see it on the other side of the beach. And so at that stage, I was like, the chickens, you know, flown the coop. And I've got two options. I can either just kind of go with the flow and hope that they take out one of my allies instead of me, like they take out Carla or they take out Warda, or Santia, who I thought at the time was with us. Or I was like, that's not really my vibe. And I thought I could either just sit back and let, you know, let them take out Carla or Warda or me or Santi. But then I thought, like, that's just not my vibe. That doesn't make for good TV, like just kind of sitting back and hoping it's not you. And then just being buggered then the next week and the week after because they've kneecapped your allies out the game. I mean, what a slow, miserable death. So, you know, I had very like Zapata energy and I was like, cool, like, you know, I'm either going to die on my feet, but I'm not going to die on my knees, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was my thinking going in. So it was absolutely the last desperate ploy of a madman. I didn't think I had any other option. I literally don't know what else I could have done in that circumstance.
Well, let me be frank here, because there is the Carla side of the equation. Looking back on all of it, how much do you think what Carla was doing from what we saw, you know, contributed to your boot here?
On the day, the minute that I saw, you know, there's that moment where me and Carla are having like a very frank business partners discussion. In that moment, I remember that was the moment I was like, oh man, I'm screwed. Like, this is like, she's now, you know, set in motion a, you know, domino effect, and there's no fixing this omelet. The eggs are scrambled. However, I think now watching the episode back and having more time to reflect on it, I wonder how much Carla actually did affect it. I mean, there's a bit of me that thinks that Chappies and Paul's switch and Santini's might have been inevitable. Mm. That even if Carla and I arrived and we all just stayed super stum and super chill, I mean, we'd literally just blindsided Pinty the night before. And, you know, I mean, obviously Chappies was aware of it via, I think now we see, like, I'm guessing a Nesu. But, I mean, they were on the wrong side of that. And, you know, we hadn't had, I had assumed at Tribal Council we'd have another tribal or two to kind of mend the bridges and kind of, you know, do some kumbaya. But that wound was still raw. And then we arrive at this tribe swap, and the numbers are such that Chappies and Paul know we just battled against them the night before. You know, they were on the outs. Mm-hmm. So it just makes sense for them to move to the other side. And me, Warda, and Carla were really close. I think even Santi, my theories of why Santi jumped was it wasn't just necessarily a personal breakdown, but she knew she would have been at the bottom of that four. So it made complete sense for her to move. So whether Carla or not caused it, I think, to be fair to Carla, it might have been inevitable, but perhaps that moment definitely expedited it.
I know that there was a secret scene where a lot of you former Voonas were sort of like relitigating the whole Pinty thing, and you're frustratingly saying in confessional, Pinty's gone, get over it. How much do you think, to the point you just made, that previous vote had an effect on the fact that you're talking with me today?
Oh, I mean, completely. In that, I mean, going into that Pinty vote, you know, we kind of adopted a belts and braces approach. I must be honest, one of the little things I didn't know, I knew that Inesu was moving between alliances, but I didn't know that her kind of apex alliance was Chappies and them, from the looks of things, getting back to Chappies. But at least from our perspective at the time, I think there was this thought of like, look, if we know we're going to go for Pinty, if they know we're going to go for Pinty, what if they have an idol and they use it to save Pinty? So we need to set up some alternatives. So, you know, I had maybe said some, passed some misinformation to Chappies Paul the night before or the day of, you know, and not that it moved Chappies, it might have moved Paul, but certainly then I'd already, you know, kind of lined the soil a little bit that night before in order to what I thought was really secure that that blindside on Pinty. But I think part of the, you know, when I was getting frustrated at that little meeting that we all had was I felt that like when you're on the island, you really have the sense of like time is ticking. Like that tribal's maybe at sunset, it's now mid-afternoon, and it takes time to put together deals, you know, like or put together alliances and arrangements. And so you feel this time pressure. And part of my thing was like, guys, we don't have time for this Dr. Phil family therapy. Like we're not gonna ventilate this wound, you know, like, but my whole shtick was saying, and we don't need to. And I guess that was my thing is I didn't see what the upside of it was going to be. I didn't see what the point was. Like what the fact remained that we, you know, pulled a fast one on them and taken out one of their allies and that I still thought they were going to distrust us. So, and the whole argument I was making in that moment was to say, look, guys, even if you're bummed with us, just if you kind of take it from a pure cold logic perspective, I think your long game plays out better with us than with the other side. If I can be honest, when I was making that argument in the body corporate, I didn't believe a word of it. Like it was pure, you know, like lawyer dicing. Like I was like, but I was like, I'm never going to bring these guys home on the emotional spiel. So let me at least try and appeal to some strategic argument. But I mean, the thing is that Paul and Chappies were absolutely right to flip. They made the right move. I don't hold it against them at all, and I would have done the same, and that's why I expected them to move to the other side. It would have been a really irrational and kind of overly emotional decision on their behalf to have stayed with us. They know we wanted them out. I mean, crazy.
I mean, the beginning of your game is so interesting because I talked about this on the podcast. I feel like we didn't see a lot of it, but we were told so much about how you were overplaying, you got yourself into trouble quickly. Illuminate on this for us. What is your side on why you ended up being targeted so early on?
So, you know, Survivor is a great show because it exists on multiple levels, right? You can be a casual viewer and tune in and just watch the show and then, you know, flick on to whatever the next show is. And that's great. But I think what's great about Survivor is it also allows room for viewers who are more into it to kind of look at the data that's presented to them and try and read between the lines and interpret and try and work things out. I mean, we live in the year of our Lord 2021. I mean, people are well aware of like nature of reality TV. Mm-hmm. And I love that about Survivor. I love that in some ways, you know, it can be a text that invites interpretation, especially when there are big questions, right? Like big, maybe inconsistency is too strong a word, but like gaps for interpretation. And in that second episode, you do see this interesting, storytelling where we're told, oh, you know, Pinty is kind of emotionally turbulent and difficult around camp. And then you see all that footage of her doing so. And then, you know, Mike's this big threat and he's playing really hard and, you know, he's just like a big strategic risk. And then, you know, it's just like me napping, me hugging Carla, like me being chatty, you know. and so my thing is like, I think there are effectively three interpretations as a viewer that I would take out of that. The first is the Shannon interpretation, which is that when I was napping, not only was I a cat, but I was in fact a telepathic cat and infiltrating people's minds and implanting these suspicions and making the game go wild, which is also slash the real G's move in lasagna theory, which is that I was just super quiet and like getting Carla, you know, to do all my business for me. But I mean, as a fan theory, it doesn't explain much, right? It's not super satisfying. Then there's the theory that then I was playing hard as Carla was and having frank, strategic conversations with people straight out the gate, and that those conversations would have given me a reputation for such. And that for whatever reason, that footage maybe doesn't make the cut. You know, maybe I wasn't on camera when I was doing it, or it hits up on the floor. But that's certainly one interpretation that I was playing as hard in the second episode as you see in the third episode. Or option three is that I was kind of just sitting on my hands and napping and being Carla's emotional support blanket. And she, out of the goodness of her heart, which would be perhaps surprising given that she's a sophisticated player, decides to just really burn all her political and social capital to protect me. So I don't know. I leave it up to the interpretation of the viewer, I guess.
Wow. All right. Like a little choose your own adventure book. Choose how Mike Claus played Survivor based on what you want to see.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of like respecting the episode that comes out, you know, and kind of being that, you know, trying to play within the four boundaries of that and honoring that. And, yeah, look, that reputation must have come from somewhere. And I guess if you look at those three interpretations, I guess I must have been playing pretty hard.
Well, the last thing I want to ask is about something, no matter what narrative you took, you saw it if you were watching the bonus clips, but some might not. So let's talk about your teeth, Mike, because some people might not know. You had a little bit of a dental incident out there on the island, but I'm happy to say that I'm seeing like a gleaming mouth of fully formed teeth smiling at me as we're talking right now. Do you want to give the backstory for those who didn't watch as to what happened and what the process was like after the show, obviously, of getting all that fixed?
Whew, that moment was actually the best psychological turning moment for me in the show, in that up until that point, I think, as I mentioned in my preseason interviews, like I'm quite an anxious person. And I think I'd arrived on the island and was kind of really locked in this pretty deep anxiety tunnel of like, oh my God, I don't want to be first boot, and I don't want to do this, and I don't want to do that. And I'm okay being a big Disney villain. I'm like super excited to lie and deceive and be a little snake. But I don't want to be unkind to people and this and that. And you know, I was really getting in my head and not really enjoying it. I mean, of course, enjoying it immensely, but my anxiety really kind of intruding into the, let's say, like the joy of it all. And I then chipped my tooth on the way to a challenge. If you like look really carefully, I think it was, I can't actually remember which challenge it was now, which is a terrible thing to say, but effectively, if you see any interview with me before a certain challenge and then after a certain challenge, that's clearly the mark where I lose the tooth. And it was in that moment, like just the clouds opened up, and because I knew I just must have looked ridiculous. You know, there's nothing better than a little ego deflation of looking like a janky pirate. And I think in that moment, it was just like the Survivor God's permission to say, listen, dude, have fun, like play super hard, be super Machiavellian. To be honest, that was definitely what was informing my mood when I called the body corporate meeting. And I guess from that moment, I was just like, I'm going to play like a pirate, like no more lawyer Mike, just pirate Mike, like sometimes pirate pretending to be lawyer Mike, but pirate Mike. It felt like a godsend, to be honest. Getting fixed was, it was kind of funny because, you know, there was COVID, right? Mm. And so like dentists were closed and open. And I also, I had to fly from South Africa to London to do some, to finish up some legal stuff. Soon after I got voted out, then I was in a country where, you know, I don't have healthcare. And so I actually rocked that broken tooth or that chipped tooth for ages. It was only, I think, in like 2 months after I got voted out that I was like, okay, cool. I now have time to go to a dentist and their dentist's open and all that stuff. So I think if you look through my Instagram, if anyone digs deep enough, they'll be able to see like how long I had that damn chiptooth for.
Oh my God. Well, whether you were Lawyer Mike or Pirate Mike or Sleeping Mike or what have you, you were a really fun person to watch. Ever since the preseason, Shannon and I really enjoyed watching and listening to you on Survivor. Obviously, wish it could have been a lot longer time, you being aboard the SS Survivor, but you had, like you said, a really fun time there, no matter what. And I want to thank you and congratulate you for, you know, living out something you had been working on for a while to make your dream come true.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that, man. And I guess, you know, it would be remiss of me to not also just give a big shout out to the producers and MNET and the production on MNET of Survivor. I mean, I'm extremely, as I said, kind of in my last little moment before, while the credits were rolling, I was grateful then and I remain grateful now. I used to think Survivor was a great game, and now I think it is the greatest game that humans have been able to come up with. And a large part of that is actually seeing what goes into making it. So huge shout outs to all the people, all the producers and MNET and Afrikaans and all the homies.
There you have it, everyone. Two exit interviews and the recap before that. It was a lot this week. And if you are here, you're about 3 hours into our coverage for week 3 of the season. Thank you so much. We really are so grateful for the support, for anyone listening, for all the engagement that we get online. We love talking about the season with the fans. We're really enjoying covering it. And thank you so much for being a part of that and being along for the ride. So we will see you next time. And until then, keep evolving. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
20
Swimmers.
£1 million.
Million
euro.
Million.
Rubli.
Tribe spoke.
Scheibe top.
Tribe spoke.
The adventure of a lifetime.